Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
This is IE America Radio Network News. I'm Corey Morris. The Palestinian group Hamas is apparently calling a truce today. The group released a statement earlier agreeing to suspend all its attacks on Israel. Hamas founder Sheikh Ahmed Yassin said the decision was reached after his organization studied all the latest developments in the so-called roadmap to peace. Former Senator Strom Thurmond is dead today. He was 100 years old. Correspondent Allison Brown now has a look back at Thurmond's nearly half century on Capitol Hill.
J. Strom Thurmond died peacefully at the Edgehill County Hospital in Edgehill, South Carolina.
The news of Strom Thurmond's death reached the Senate floor as lawmakers were finishing up work on Medicare reform. Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist, who broke the passing to his colleagues, says there will be no roll call vote today and is allowing time for senators to pay tribute to the South Carolinian who spent 48 years in the chamber. Upon hearing the news, South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham says Thurmond was an icon to his constituents.
And his legacy in my state, across party lines, across racial lines, across regional lines, was that he was the go-to guy.
Funeral arrangements expected to be announced later today. Allison Brown, Washington.
U.S. military officials say they still don't know what exactly happened to two American soldiers who disappeared along with their Humvee near Baghdad earlier this week. The vice chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Peter Pace, says the military doesn't know, quote, what happened or why. He did say, though, an active search for the two soldiers is continuing. Pace made his comments appearing along with Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld on Capitol Hill for talks with lawmakers earlier. Secretary Rumsfeld rejected charges post where Iraq has turned into a guerrilla war zone. He suggested the transformation of Iraq is proceeding according to plan and argued that it will still take, quote, some time. Rumsfeld's comments, meanwhile, come following reports yet another American soldier was killed in Iraq during an ambush near the city of Najaf. That soldier investigating a car theft at the time he was attacked. And there's word another U.S. military troop member was shot in the head while shopping for DVDs at a store in Baghdad.
What's the big news in allergy medicine this season? It's a new name in non-drowsy relief, Allivert. New Allivert starts dissolving the instant it touches your tongue, without water. So you can take Allivert inside, outside, in your car, wherever you are. Allivert is non-drowsy 24-hour relief in a quick-dissolving tablet. New Allivert. Allergy medicine you can take right when you need it, wherever you are. Allivert. Use as directed.
This is Dr. Danny. Paul, you're on the air.
Hey, Dr. Danny.
Hey.
Man, listen, we're having a hard time potty training our son.
Well, that's a common problem. How old is your boy?
He's 26.
Paul, I have some bad news. At this age, potty training will be near impossible.
You kidding me?
No, but Paul, I do have some good news.
All right, man. What?
I just saved a bunch of money on car insurance by switching to Geico.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
Both the House and Senate have approved legislation now for Medicare drug benefits. There are differences in the two measures still, and this morning President Bush urged lawmakers to resolve them quickly and get the bill to his desk. The House version relies more on introducing private market competition to Medicare than the Senate bill. Firefighters say they're gaining ground in the Aspen fire in southern Arizona that's been burning for over a week now. It's burned over 30,000 acres, but is said now to be 50% contained. In New Mexico, meanwhile, police are holding three suspects they believe are responsible for starting another wildfire earlier near Albuquerque.
For one day only, come into Sears for big savings throughout the store at the Sears Great Saturday Sale. This Saturday, starting at 9 a.m., get 50% off shorts, tees, swimwear, and beach towels. Plus, all grills, mowers, and patio sets are on sale, too. So hurry into the Sears Great Saturday Sale to save big on great brands. Find us online at Sears.com or at America Online, keyword Sears. Sears. Good life. Great price. Apparel offer valid while quantities last. Exclusions apply. See store for details. Sale ends 6/28.
President Bush just formally announced the creation of the much-anticipated National Do Not Call List. It's a registry designed to keep telemarketers from calling consumers who don't want to be bothered at home.
When Americans are sitting down at dinner or a parent is reading to his or her child, the last thing they need is a call from a stranger with a sales pitch.
The president said the registry is necessary so telemarketers will, quote, respect the privacy of citizens. Information about the Do Not Call registry can be found by calling 888-382-1222 or at www.donotcall.gov. And the U.S. Department of Labor has filed a lawsuit to recover some of the money lost when Enron's management allowed retirement plans to continue investing in company stock, even though they knew it was overvalued. Former employees and lawyers already involved in lawsuits against Enron and its former officers welcomed the new lawsuit, saying the action will only help their chances of recovering some of their losses while in court. I'm Corey Morris, and this is IE America Radio Network News.
Hi, I'm Bobby Likas with today's Car Clinic Minute. A picture's worth a thousand words, so picture this, a toilet bowl. You know what car part is similar to that household favorite? Battery? Gas tank? No, those won't float. But when I come back, I'll tell you what does.
Doug is frugal.
Well, money doesn't grow on trees, you know.
The problem is, Doug is about to buy a used car.
Yep, and I'm going to get ripped off!
And Doug doesn't know about Carfax, which lets you check a used car's history to see if it's been in an accident, has accurate mileage, stuff like that. So you know your money's well spent.
So I might save thousands?
Exactly, Doug. Just go to CARFAX.com or ask your dealer for a Carfax vehicle history report.
Hey, how about we go halfsies on the car?
How about nunsies?
How about sumsies?
No. Carfax, the truth about used cars.
What's the automotive equivalent of your toilet bowl? Your carburetor. Both have little floats that control levels of liquid. Ever lifted the top of a toilet tank and bent the rod to stop water from flowing? Carburetors have similar float valves that adjust fuel level. In toilets, the excess water streams harmlessly to the sewer. But in carburetors, surplus fuel flows into the motor, causing engine damage, decreased gas mileage, and air pollution. All good reasons to include carburetor checks in your annual inspections. I'm Bobby Likas. Likas, you'll love us.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome to our program today, broadcasting live on the IE America Radio Network through the ABC StarGuide 3 satellite 2 stations all across the United States. Broadcasting from the depths of outer space on the Sirius radio satellite, which you can get in your car if you have Ford, Chrysler, and all those other cars. They're coming with standard equipment now for the Sirius radio receiver, satellite receiver. And broadcasting live on the Internet from IEAmericaRadio.com, RadioPower.org, and archived at WhiteRoseSociety.org. This is the Tom Hartman radio program. Uncommon sense from the radical middle. You're in the democracy zone today. Does the Constitution guarantee liberty? It seems to be the question set up by yesterday's Supreme Court case, and I want to dig into this. This is the profound lack of understanding of the history of the Constitution among so many of our legislators and apparently several of our Supreme Court justices is mind-boggling. And we'll get into that in just a moment. But first, today is day 99 in the search for weapons of... Oh, hang on just a second. This was just handed to me. From the MoveOn.org PAC primary, when voters were asked to choose one candidate, Howard Dean got 43.87% of the vote. Dennis Kucinich got 23.93% of the vote. And Kerry got 15.73% of the vote. Everybody else was below 10%. In fact, everybody else was below 3%. Edwards got 3.19%, and everybody else was in the twos, the ones, or the point ones, adding up to 100%. So Dean won, but he didn't get 50.1%. So I think they're going to do then a runoff. I haven't read the whole thing here, but those are the numbers. Dean, Howard Dean, has won the MoveOn.org primary, but it is not a 50% win. It is a 43.87% win, which is still almost twice what his closest competitor, Kucinich, got, and about three times what Mr. Kerry received. Day 99 of the Weapons of Mass Deception search. We have by the way, if you'd like to drop into our chat room, go to Tom Hartman Show, www.tomhartmanshow.com, and click on the chat button. And that will take you to the International Trade Forum on CompuServe. Up in the upper left-hand side, you'll see a chat button there, and that'll take you right into the chat room. There's already a whole bunch of folks in there having a lively conversation. One Party America comparing us to Mexico, talking about Paul Krugman's column today. Interesting stuff. Anyhow, we have this quote from our depends on how you... Anyway, here we go.
Iraq possesses ballistic missiles with a likely range of hundreds of miles.
Hundreds of miles.
Far enough to strike Saudi Arabia, Israel, Turkey, and other nations. In a region where more than 135,000 American civilians and service members live and work.
More than 135,000 Americans. Now, okay, so Iraq has ballistic missiles. They actually had a range of 120 miles. And now let's try to do a little psychological sleight of hand by stitching the fact that Iraq has ballistic missiles into the same phrase, the same paragraph, where we talk about dangers to the United States. Now, you may remember that in the very last days of the weapons inspectors, they found basically a model airplane made out of balsa wood and duct tape, one of them, which could have flown maybe 50 or 75 feet. This was basically a toy. It was ridiculed when it was released, but this speech was made a week before the facts came out, although President Bush knew what he was talking about when he said this, and obviously what he said was not true. Here we continue with his speech.
We've also discovered through intelligence that Iraq has a growing fleet of manned and unmanned aerial vehicles.
Yes.
It could be used to disperse chemical or biological weapons across broad areas.
It was actually vehicle, not vehicles, and it was made of balsa wood and duct tape with a model airplane motor.
We're concerned that Iraq is exploring ways of using these UAVs for missions targeting the United States.
So this is the system. Now, this is clear deception. And this is just one of many examples, and the president is not even claiming that he hasn't deceived us. I mean, they're not saying, no, we didn't lie. They're saying, they're trying to change the subject. They're saying, but he was a bad guy. Well, so was Robert Mugabe. So let's hear what a few Republicans have to say about what should happen when the president lies. Representative Henry Hyde. This, thanks to Steve Patelli, who published this on Common Dreams last week or so, when will House Republicans call for Bush's impeachment? Representative Henry Hyde, Republican of Illinois, quote,
there is a visibility factor in the president's public acts, and those which betray a trust or reveal contempt for the law are hard to sweep under the rug. They reverberate, they ricochet all over the land, and provide the worst possible example for our young people, end quote.
Republican of Wisconsin, Representative James Sensenbrenner, quote,
the truth is still the truth, and a lie is still a lie, and the rule of law should apply to everyone, no matter what excuses are made by the president's defenders. We have done so because of our devotion to the rule of law and our fear that if the president does not suffer the legal and constitutional consequences of his actions, the impact of allowing a president to stand above the law will be felt for generations to come. Laws not enforced, Representative Sensenbrenner said, are open invitations for more serious and more criminal behavior, end quote.
Steve Chabot, Republican of Ohio,
quote, it would be wrong for you to tell America's children that some lies are all right. It would be wrong to show the rest of the world that some of our laws don't really matter, end quote.
Steve Beyer, Republican of Indiana, and I quote,
I have also heard some senators from both sides of the aisle state publicly, I think these offenses rise to the level of high crimes and misdemeanors. Now, to state publicly that you believe that high crimes and misdemeanors have occurred, but for some reason you have this desire not to remove the president, that...
Many other nations, but... So, where is all this fear and loathing coming from? Several conservative commentators spent hours.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection. the rise of corporate dominance and the theft of human rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic now. Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide, and you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Now, everything you need for successful estate planning comes in one package. The new Master Estate Kit is a collection of legal power that would cost you $500 or more if prepared by a lawyer. Here's what you'll get. First, a legal will kit, one praised by nearly 500,000 buyers. Second, a living will kit that assures your wishes will be followed in case of an irreversible injury or illness. And third, a power of attorney kit that includes all the required forms. Order today and we'll include the new Family Legal Guide. It answers all your questions about small claims court, landlord agreements, personal bankruptcy, and much more. An $80 value, the complete Master Estate Kit costs only $39.95. For immediate delivery of the Master Estate Kit and your free Family Legal Guide, call 1-800-221-0393. Pay only $39.95 plus shipping. Every kit carries an unlimited money-back guarantee. Call 1-800-221-0393 now. That's 1-800-221-0393.
If you're looking for the latest in cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune into tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program with experts featuring the latest in consumer electronics, technology, computers, and the Internet. We cover all things cool, like digital photography and video, home theater and audio, home automation, gadgets and gizmos, the technology of making music, computer peripherals, HDTV, DVD, MP3s, car audio, navigation and security, and lots more. If it draws current, we talk about it. Let us bring you into tomorrow. Check out our website anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, here on the IE America Radio Network.
Prepare to be astonished!
Okay, so just what is going on here, people?
Did you know that you can get the best of Progressive Talk Radio on Sirius Satellite Radio Stream 145?
Oh, really?
Well, that's remarkable.
Monday through Friday on Sirius Satellite Radio Stream 145 is loaded with political talk radio from the other side.
Hurrah!
Kick it off your morning with Doug Steffens' Good Day from 5 a.m. till noon Eastern Time, followed by the Tom Hartman Show from noon to 3 p.m. Then get different perspectives from different show hosts on Radio Free Speed Zone from 3 to 5 p.m.
Yeah, okay, that sounds good.
Family Talk with Dr. Mike Riera then takes the reins from 5 p.m. till 7, followed by All American Talk Radio from 7 p.m. till 9. Then get ready to fire up your night with the Mike Malloy Show from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time, all live Monday through Friday on Sirius Satellite Radio Stream 145, powered by the only progressive talk radio network, i.e. America Radio Network.
So what do you want, a medal?
Well, isn't that special?
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
To the Tom Hartman Radio Program on the IE America Radio Network, Justice Scalia. Now, keep in mind when you hear these that George Bush is on record as saying that when he looks for a replacement Supreme Court justice for one of the two justices who may retire this term or next, that when he looks for a replacement, that Scalia and Thomas are his models for a good Supreme Court justice. In the dissent in this case yesterday, this anti-sodomy law case, Justice Scalia says, and I quote, "There is no right to liberty under the Due Process Clause, though today's opinion repeatedly makes that claim," end quote. And Clarence Thomas, in his dissent, says, and I quote, I can find neither in the Bill of Rights nor any other part of the Constitution a general right of privacy, or, as the court terms it today, the liberty of the person both in its spatial and more transcendent dimensions, end quote. Well, Justice Thomas, you can't find in the Constitution the right to get married. You can't find in the Constitution the right to breathe air. You can't find in the Constitution the right to buy things or to sell things. You can't find in the Constitution the right to have children. It was just assumed that there are certain rights that humans have. What you find in the Constitution are the constraints on the government. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number if you'd like to be on the program. 1-800-825-5937. Tim, welcome to the Tom Hartman program on the IE America Radio Network.
Hi, Tom. I'd like to talk about this subject matter, but briefly, you mentioned the move on poll and stuff.
Right.
I wonder if you could do a program on the iSwitched.org poll that's also going out. Have you heard about that?
I don't know about that, Tim, trying
to take some of the things that this poll left out. It's going to put in Dean, Kucinich, Nader, and other people, sponsored by Greens, and it's going to use the instant runoff method to voting. The problem with this moved on thing was that some people voted for one or the other, and as far as Kucinich or Dean, trying to get a more left of center kind of candidate, and I think there's some problems there. It was an either or, and you might, you know, had a if you had an instant runoff like you've advocated in the past, you might have a more clearer result.
Yeah, I thought they might even be doing that, because when I voted, there was a second tier of voting, which is if this first person doesn't make it, who would you be willing to support in the presidential, if there was a presidential election?
It would have been interesting also to see whether some of those, say, percentage people would have voted for Nader and stuff. So the iSwitch.org is having one, and you could do a program about that. The problem is that...
Sure.
You know, you've been talking about these rights, and unfortunately, the Democratic Party doesn't understand it either, because the rights of privacy and what with this ruling, you know, what about the don't ask, don't tell policy, which is one of the first things that Clinton came through and essentially began a witch hunt as far as people who were not committing any laws or violations in the privacy of being in the military.
Mm-hmm.
And that is grave concern. When I hear, you know, perhaps the argument is going to be, well, we've got to have a Democrat who's going to appoint some Supreme Court justices. Well, whoa. You know, these candidates that are out there now are not exactly espousing a lot of, you know, equal protection rules and laws for gays and other people out there. And that's a grave concern. Almost none of them have supported, for example, the gays' right to marriage.
Yeah, this is the thing that is so boggling to me is we're talking with Tim from Hartford, Connecticut is our caller. I forgot to mention your town there, Tim. But Tim, the thing that is so boggling to me is that we have legislators who don't understand this stuff. Rick Santorum, I'll get into that after the break. We got a break coming up. Tim, is that the end of your point, or do you want to hang on?
I can hang on for just a minute afterwards.
Okay, great. Stick around. We'll be back in just a few minutes. This is the Tom Hartman Radio Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
For the IE America Radio Network, this is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm John Hamilton.
Time's almost up for public comment on a U.S. Department of Labor bid to radically reduce the number of American workers who qualify for overtime pay. And since the Bush administration's Labor Department refused to schedule a public forum on the proposal, labor unions in Washington, D.C. decided to hold their own hearing in the public auditorium of the department's headquarters. The event was to have been coordinated by the International Federation of Professional and Technical Engineers and open to other unions and the general public. But according to the union's communications representative, Candace Rett, the Labor Department put a halt to the idea.
I received a call from a John Void at the events management office indicating that until further notice, all outside events at the Department of Labor had been canceled.
Labor Department officials did not respond to repeated requests for an interview. Candace Rett believes the department doesn't want word of the changes to get out.
If these proposed regulations go through, it will amount to a pay cut, simple and plain, for millions of workers.
Rett says Monday's forum is still a go and will be held outside the building.
The U.S. Department of Labor is going after former Enron executives for the destruction of thousands of Enron workers' pension funds. The lawsuit filed Thursday accuses some 20 Enron execs, including former Chairman Kenneth Lay, of shirking their responsibility to protect worker pension assets, instead leveraging that money to keep a fraudulent corporate accounting system alive. More than 20,000 Enron employees lost at least two-thirds of their retirement nest eggs when the company imploded in December 2001. Nearly two dozen similar civil suits have been filed already, and the Labor Department suit will likely be consolidated with those. Damages could collectively run to more than $1 billion.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights, taking your calls, talking to celebrities like Raven Simone from The Cosby Show and the Dr. Dolittle movies. Do you have any pets of your own?
I do. I have two chinchillas and I have a big Briar.
Do you train your dog?
I don't. I just give him love and take him out. So he better love me because I have to wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning.
So here you are, Charisse Dolittle, to talk to the animals. You don't even train your own dog. Nothing but love.
Nothing but love. All the love.
Animal Talk on the IE America Radio Network.
Hello, this is Andy Dave Rush inviting you to join the fun on Home Improvement USA. Great guests and experts offer home improvement advice and keep us updated on new products and technologies. On Home Improvement USA, we give away terrific prizes to all our callers. Join me, Handy Dave, along with Ken Walchek on location at Clark Devon Hardware in Chicago and engineer and handyman Dave Brentlinger for Home Improvement USA. 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 Pacific on Saturday. Don't miss it. Home Improvement USA.
We broadcast it on Saturday at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific on IE America Radio Network.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Little boxes on the hillside, little boxes made of ticky-tacky, little boxes, all the same. There's a green one and a pink one and a blue one and a yellow one, and they're all made out of ticky-tacky and they all look just the same.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Radical, uncommon sense from the radical middle. Welcome back to the program. We are talking in this segment about, well, we're looking at the news, what's going on in the world, and right now This Supreme Court thing here where the Reverend Jerry Falwell, according to today's New York Times, said in an interview, "This is probably as bad a day as the court has had on social issues since Roe v. Wade. The right of privacy ahead of respect for community standards of morality, which have prevailed for many years." Ken Connor, president of the Family Research Council, said this is classic judicial activism arrogance. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937, if you'd like to weigh in on this. And we're talking with Tim in Hartford, Connecticut. Tim, we ran up against the break there. You want to finish up your point?
Yeah, basically, it just, am I there?
Yeah,
you're
okay,
on. I'm sorry, I wasn't sure. Let me just finish up by just saying that, you know, it's time, especially for the Democratic Party, whether it's Howard Dean, who says states' rights for things like gun control, and who is forced by his state, you know, to have protection for gays, and that's how the civil union, which doesn't have the same rights as gay marriage, would have out there. It's time for them to stand up and say, okay, this ruling probably means the don't ask, don't tell policies should be thrown out of the military, and it's time for equal protection for homosexuals on a federal and state level across the board instead of this kind of hodgepodge, a little bit of this, a little bit of that. And I'm waiting for that. You know, kind of basic human rights. Again, I'm a straight married guy. You know, I don't have a dog in this fight. But, you know, it's time for those, you know, the Democratic Party and these candidates, especially who are running for office, to finally stand up for these kind of personal rights and responsibilities that are out there. And that this was such a landmark case, they need to start, you know, claiming this issue if they really want to, you know, invigorate gay voters.
Good point, Tim.
Thanks.
Thanks for sharing that. Appreciate your being on today. I have to say, I live in Vermont, and I've lived here for the last 8 years, and when Howard Dean was governor. And the reality is that the Supreme Court looked back at the Constitution of Vermont. Vermont and Texas were the only two states that were actually nations before they joined the United States. Vermont outlawed slavery before the United States existed, and slavery was illegal in Vermont throughout that time, for example. And the Supreme Court looked back in a case that was brought before, the Vermont Supreme Court, looked back at the Vermont Constitution, written back in the 1700s, and said this Constitution does not say that marriage has to, you know, that the a man and a woman constitute marriage, and required the legislature and the governor, really the governor had nothing to do with it, very little to do with it, it was a legislative thing, to make it possible for people of the same sex and for people who are related to have the ability to will things to each other, to, you know, that these kind of civil unions, the civil unions, of course, are for same-sex couples. But in his defense, I would say Howard Dean was certainly not opposed to that, and he has since become, and to the best of my knowledge, and I don't know him personally, but I, as I said, I live here, I read the papers. He works for all the years that he was here as governor. He operated six blocks from my house. He, I believe, is an advocate of gay rights. And I think this is a much larger issue. I agree with you, Tim, that it's about time that we said that the roughly 10% of the population of the United States who are homosexual rather than heterosexual should have equal rights with heterosexuals, and it's going to take some time. I mean, and I don't mean that because it should take time. I mean that just in the, you know, we acknowledged over 100 years ago that blacks and whites should have equal rights, and we're still not there. We acknowledged in the 1920s and 1920 that women and men should have equal rights. We're still not there. So this isn't going to happen overnight, but it is happening quickly, and I think that this decision is a big step in the right direction. But what concerns me about this, not concerns as in I'm opposed to the decision, but what concerns me about the reaction to this decision is that the people who are doing the reacting don't understand the Constitution. They don't understand the basis of this decision. They think, and they're out there saying it. I mean, let me just, you know, share a little bit of this with you from today's New York Times. This is an article by Neil Lewis. Conservatives furious over court's decision. This has not been a good week for social conservatives, said J.A. Sekulow, the legal director of the American Center for Law and Justice, a conservative legal advocacy group founded by Pat Robertson. I already shared with you Jerry Falwell's comments. Ken Connor of the Family Research Council says, quote, "This opens the door to bigamy, adult incest, polygamy, and prostitution. If the hallmark is privacy and consent, as long as you have those two, the court is saying you have no basis for legislating to the contrary. Notwithstanding the public health issues involved when you have sexual relations, for example, between a mother and an adult son," end quote. In other words, he's saying if it doesn't involve children and it's between consenting adults, it should be, this decision is going to say it should be legal. And he thinks that's a terrible thing. And I think that, frankly, what people do in their bedrooms or in their homes is their own damn business. So, I mean, so when Senator Rick Santorum said that if the Texas sodomy statute was struck down, quote, "you would have the right to bigamy, you would have the right to polygamy, you'd have the right to incest, you'd have the right to adultery, you'd have the right to anything," end quote, he was saying that as if it was a bad thing. And what it demonstrates is that Rick Santorum does not understand the Constitution of the United States. 1-800-TALK-YES, if you'd like to weigh in on this, 1-800-825-5937. And David in Santa Fe, welcome to the program.
Hey, thank you, Tom. Yeah, that's an astute comment that you made, that there are many, many congressmen that do not know that the Constitution was drafted as a limiting document on government, and they think that it's, you know, the government's right to bestow rights.
Yeah, I mean, even worse than that.
It just shows you how far things have gotten. And back in 1879, there was a kind of a secret thing that was put in place where the government went from calling itself the United States of America, with America being capitalized, and the words United States in lowercase merely being a descriptive term of the several states, to the capitalized United States of America. Some people say it was actually incorporated at that time. And it's too long of a story to go into right now. I might try to post it on your message board later. But the point is that we've had, oh, say, 150 years or something of this subversion. And generations come and generations go. And the point is that more, and if you tell a lie long enough and you hide the truth long enough and generations of people come and go, then what people believe to be true right now is a falsehood, but they don't even know it. It's like
he who
that,
controls history controls
that illustration of throwing a frog in boiling water and he'll jump out to save his skin. But if you put him in room temperature water and increase the temperature a little bit every day, you can boil him and he won't know it.
Yeah, Daniel Quinn's metaphor.
We're all
excellent.
In that shape, and congressmen included.
Yeah. Yeah, good point, David. And you know, I have a replica of the Constitution of the United States and of the Bill of Rights, and of the Declaration of Independence. And in both of them, the words "United" and the word "States" are capitalized. Just FYI. But you know, if you've got some information on that, I'd love to see it. You can post it on our message board. If you go to TomHartmann.com, click through the radio show, or just go to TomHartmannShow.com, and
yeah.
There's the message board there. So,
I have a long exposition on it, and I would love to have you research it and see what you can come up with. But
sure.
We got slipped a fast one.
Yeah, well, you've got my curiosity going. There's a lot of conspiracy theories out there that some are credible and some aren't.
I haven't done this, but I hear that if you go to the congressional record, I think it might be in October of 1879, you will find this entry changing the name of the government.
Well,
and, of course, at that time, people didn't have newspapers or electronic communications, so whenever they heard the words United States, they thought they were hearing them the way they always heard them. But, in fact, they were now capitalized, and it meant something entirely different.
Yeah. Well, I'm skeptical, but I'm willing to look at it, and
Okay. Those
books are not hard to find. I mean, here in Montpelier in Vermont, the Supreme Court has a huge law library with all these books. So, David, thank you very much for the call. I appreciate your calling in and sharing that. Justice Antonin Scalia accused the court yesterday of, quote, having taken sides in the culture war and having largely signed on to the so-called homosexual agenda, end quote. He said that this decision, quote, effectively decrees the end of all morals legislation, end quote. Now, this is an interesting point and an interesting argument, because the reality is that as much as the United States, right from the get-go, from 227 years ago to today, has said, we are about liberty, we are about personal freedom, we hold these rights to be self-evident, that all men are created, that these rights are inalienable, that is, they cannot be separated from us, using John Locke's language, with the idea of natural rights, that humans are born with certain rights, and that those rights are not given to them by governments or kings or popes or anybody else, that they are born with them, and that governments must recognize those rights, not ratify them, but recognize them, and get out of the way of them, and that governments don't have rights, they have privileges. Okay. That's the predicating thing. No matter how much we have given lip service to this over the years and genuflect at it, the reality is that the court and the legislature of the United States and of the various states have always really reflected public opinion. In 1873, in Bradwell versus State, Sarah Bradwell in Chicago, a young woman who graduated from law school, walked into a courtroom her first day as an attorney, and the judge looked down and said, you're a woman, you can't practice in my court, and threw her out. She sued, she took it to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court ruled that women could only derive their rights through their husbands or their fathers. And that was the law of the United States, really, until Roe v. Wade. Roe v. Wade in 1973 reversed Bradwell versus State of 1873. And what that did was it reflected the dominant power, which was basically rich white guys. And you have that situation. You had Plessy versus Ferguson in 1896. A guy named Ferguson Sometimes I mix them up. I'm pretty sure that Ferguson was the son of the freed slave. Gets on a, maybe it was Plessy. In fact, yeah, it was Plessy. Plessy gets on a railroad car, and he gets thrown off by a railroad cop named Ferguson. He gets back on, he gets thrown off, he gets back on, trying to get into the whites-only compartment, and he gets arrested. Takes it to the Supreme Court. Now, there were a lot of people. This wasn't just an isolated incident, just like the Rosa Parks thing wasn't an isolated incident. There were a lot of people who were working to make this happen, working to make this a big deal. And they got it before the Supreme Court, and they thought that this would finally cause the court to say, okay, back in the 1860s, in the late 1860s, 1868, as I recall, the 14th Amendment was passed, guaranteeing equal protection under the law, regardless of race. And they figured, okay, it's now 1896, 20, 30 years later, and now the court has to say, you can't have this kind of legal segregation with whites-only compartments in the trains. And the court instead, in a decision that was the headnote for which was written up by John Chandler Bancroft Davis, the former son of the governor of Massachusetts, the guy who wrote the headnote for the 1886 Santa Clara County case that gave corporations human rights, which the court hadn't even ruled. I mean, this guy was out of control. And in his head note for the Plessy versus Ferguson case, it's interesting reading. I don't have it right in front of me here right now, but it defines the toxicity of the racism of that day by example. I mean, it's just a horrific document. But that reflected the opinion of the power structure. And then in 1954, after the civil rights movement, Martin Luther King, Brown versus Board of Education came before the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court reversed it. So the court, there is no, I mean, we talk about these eternal truths, but there is no eternal truth, it seems. There's just, so, we're going to continue to have some things that we're going to say, these are illegal, and other things that we're going to say, these are legal. But times are changing. Times are very much changing. It's very interesting. Jerry Falwell says, this was a capitulation to the gay and lesbian agenda whose ultimate goal is the legalization of same-sex marriages. And he goes on to say that the majority of Americans oppose legalizing sexual relations between consenting adults of the same sex. But a Gallup poll just last month, this is in today's New York Times, it's Neil Lewis article, Gallup poll just last month shows that 80% of Americans, oh, I'm sorry, 60%, need stronger glasses. It's still more than half. 60% of Americans think such relations should be legal. Only 35% were opposed. Now, back in 1977, it was only 43% in favor and 43% opposed. So times are changing. People's attitudes are changing. People are becoming more tolerant, and it's a good thing. So, but you know, that is a completely separate issue. It's a completely separate issue from the bizarre way that this case is being handled. Here's the decision by Justice Kennedy. This is how they opened the decision. And I quote, liberty protects the person. Now, again, keep in mind, the word privacy doesn't exist in the Constitution or the Declaration of Independence, but the word liberty sure does. Privacy wasn't a word that they felt they had to restate back then. It was a given. Well, you've got the Fourth Amendment, which clearly defines your right of privacy. To be unmolested, to not have your person, your personal effects and your home invaded. Okay, here back to the decision here. Justice Kennedy, liberty protects the person from unwarranted government intrusions into a dwelling or other private places. He's referencing the Fourth Amendment. In our tradition, the state is not omnipresent in the home. Freedom extends beyond spatial bounds. Liberty presumes an autonomy of self. In other words, this is not just a man is a king in his own castle, kind of, you know, the old British law thing, or a woman for that matter. But this is a deeper truth than that. He says, liberty presumes an autonomy of self that includes freedom of thought, belief, expression, and certain intimate conduct. The instant case, the case before us, involves liberty of the person, both in its spatial and more transcendent dimensions. Spot on, Justice Kennedy. Well said. He understands that the Constitution limits the government. It doesn't give us rights. We are born with them. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Radio Program on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
To create create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
For one day only, come into Sears for big savings throughout the store at the Sears Great Saturday Sale. This Saturday, starting at 9 a.m., get 50% off shorts, tees, swimwear, and beach towels. Plus, all grills, mowers, and patio sets are on sale, too. So hurry into the Sears Great Saturday Sale to save big on great brands. Find us online at Sears.com or at America Online, keyword Sears. Sears, good life, great price. Apparel offer valid while quantities last. Exclusions apply. See store for details. Sale ends 6/28.
Summer's here, and we can't think of a better way to kick it off than with a new car and an extra $4,000 in your pocket. Because right now, General Motors is offering $4,000 cash back on every 2003 Chevy Cavalier, S10, Tracker, and Avalanche, Pontiac, Sunfire, Grand Prix, and four-cylinder Grand Am, Old Silhouette, Buick LeSabre, and GMC Sonoma. Or qualified buyers can choose 0% APR financing for 5 years. You can't beat it. So if you've been putting off buying a car or truck, don't wait any longer. GM's making it easy for just about anybody who needs a car or truck to buy one. $4,000 back or 0% APR from the Great American Car Company. Now through July 7th, just in time for summer. You know there's a car or truck that's right for you. Come find it. Monthly payment is $16.67 for every $1,000 you finance. Example down payment approximately 12%. Some customers will not qualify. Take delivery by 7703. See dealer for details.
Attention all plaintiffs. Personal injury, negligence, premises liability, medical malpractice, product liability, commercial cases. Receive up to $50,000 instant cash assistance. Call now, 800-586-5493. Get cash now on your pending lawsuit. No risk, no payments. We only collect when your case is settled. Call 800-586-5493. Express Lawsuit Funding can help you. 800-586-5493.
The Mr. Rogers Parenting Book. Fred Rogers, a pleasure to have you here.
What I'm hearing you say is that you delight in creating community.
I do. I think thinking about things and working through problems and issues is an important tool.
I'm just thinking that the world could take some lessons from the Doug Steffen neighborhood.
Doug Steffen's Good Day.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Animal Talk, your animalological super information highway, helping you with your pets. Every Sunday night, we take your calls, help your pets, always give away some prizes, and talk to celebrities, like from It Is Enough, Dick Van Patten.
I've been listening to your show. It's fascinating. It's very interesting.
We're nuts, aren't we?
I can see why people would call you up. You really know what you're talking about. It's terrific. Very, very informative.
Uh-oh, we got him on the wrong channel.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights, 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Central, on the IE America Radio Network.
Show. We are very lucky tonight to have joining us from California, Geneva, BartCop.com's resident astrologer. Can you tell us anything about George W. Bush's chart?
There was a lot of stuff in his chart. He's got a lot of aspects on his own that would indicate that he would be easily maneuvered into being a puppet, a front man, or people who have more of a scheme in mind like that.
He is a very weak man when you get right down to it, isn't
he? Yes, he is.
Extremely weak-willed. What sort of looming obstacles might keep Bush from being reelected? Is he going to face some sort of impeachment, criminal charges? Can you elaborate?
Well, that would be nice. I mean,
it would.
If they did it to Clinton with as little as they had to go on.
Oh, my God.
Why not?
The Mike Malloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
We don't need no thought control. No dark sarcasm.
And welcome back to the Tom Hartman Radio Program on the IE America Radio Network. It's about 4 minutes before the top of the hour. We've been talking about this decision striking down the Texas sodomy law by the Supreme Court yesterday. Now, there are folks who are saying, well, Justice O'Connor, who concurred with Justice Kennedy, see, Justice Kennedy got it right. He understood. Clearly, you read the decision, that Justice Kennedy understands that we as humans, not just as citizens of the United States, before this country was even imagined, we as humans had rights, that there is this thing called human rights that can't be separated from us. And that the freedom of thought, the freedom of behavior, the freedom of expression, the freedom of belief, the freedom of certain intimate conduct, to quote Justice Kennedy. Now, Justice O'Connor, the right-wingers are going, oh, no, O'Connor has turned into a liberal. And people on the left are going, no, maybe she is a liberal. Well, no. Although she agreed with this decision, she agreed on a completely different basis. And the basis of her agreement should give you pause. She says, rather than relying on the substantive component of the 14th Amendment's Due Process Clause, as the Court does, I base my conclusion on the 14th Amendment's Equal Protection Clause. The statute, I'm quoting from Justice O'Connor, the statute at issue here makes sodomy a crime only if a person, quote, engages in deviant sexual intercourse with another individual of the same sex, end quote. Sodomy between opposite sex partners, however, is not a crime in Texas. That is, Texas treats the same conduct differently based solely on the participants. Those harmed by this law are people who have same-sex sexual orientation and thus are more likely to engage in behavior prohibited by 2106. The Texas statute makes homosexuals unequal in the eyes of the law by making particular conduct, and only that conduct, subject to criminal sanction. In other words, what she's saying is that if it's legal for straight people to do it, then it should be legal for gay people to do it. Now, on its face, that sounds great. But what's implicit in what she's saying is that it is still legal, it's still appropriate for the government to be overlooking this stuff and deciding whether it should be legal or not. So she is still, you know, one of the social conservatives. She's just, you know, broadening her scope of what she would be willing to tolerate. This is the Tom Hartman Show on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be back after the news at the top of the hour.
Through a hole in the air, from those beds, Tiananmen Square. It's coming from the field, but this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from sirens night and day, from the fires.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
Hi, Truth Seekers. This is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive, political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES.
Mike Malloy is rational and, you know, I mean, whatever.
You want me fired, too?
I mean, I hate the guy. And
you
it's
hate me?
True.
You
why,
hate
why
me?
Put something on that says he's a great goof, liberal.
Goof.
You know, I just can't believe it.
The Mike Malloy Show, weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight, Eastern Time, on IE America Radio Network.
This is IE America Radio Network News. I'm Corey Morris. Former Senator Strom Thurmond has died. He passed away yesterday at the age of 100. Correspondent Allison Brown now has a look back on Thurmond's 50 years on Capitol Hill.
J. Strom Thurmond died peacefully at the Edgehill County Hospital in Edgehill, South Carolina.
The news of Strom Thurmond's death reached the Senate floor as lawmakers were finishing up work on Medicare reform. Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist, who broke the passing to his colleagues, says there will be no roll call vote today and is allowing time for senators to pay tribute to the South Carolinian who spent 48 years in the chamber. Upon hearing the news, South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham says Thurmond was an icon to his constituents.
And his legacy in my state, across party lines, across racial lines, across regional lines, was that he was the go-to guy.
Funeral arrangements expected to be announced later today. Allison Brown, Washington.
The punishment phase of the Shante Mallard trial, which has come to be known as the Windshield Murder case, continues today in Fort Worth, Texas. More from reporter John Clemens.
The focus of today's testimony is dealing with the average person's ability to function after taking ecstasy, smoking pot, and consuming alcohol, like Shante Mallard did the night that she struck and killed Gregory Biggs. Mallard has been found guilty of striking Biggs with her car in October 2001 and then allowing him to die in her garage embedded in her windshield. At the Tarrant County Justice Center, this is John Clemens.
And U.S. military officials say they still aren't sure what happened to two American soldiers who disappeared along with their Humvee near Baghdad earlier this week. General Peter Pace is the vice chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff.
We do not know the specifics of what happened or why. The units on the ground are working very hard to determine through local contacts what happened, and they're out searching for the soldiers, but we do not know the specifics.
Pace and Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld were on Capitol Hill today for talks with lawmakers on the progress of the mop-up and reconstruction efforts currently going on in Iraq.
This is Dr. Danny. Paul, you're on the air.
Hey, Dr. Danny.
Hey.
Man, listen. We're having a hard time potty training our son.
Well, that's a common problem. How old is your boy?
He's 26.
Paul, I have some bad news. At this age, potty training will be near impossible.
You kidding me?
No, but Paul, I do have some good news.
All right, man. What?
I just saved a bunch of money on car insurance by switching to Geico.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
What's the big news in allergy medicine this season? It's a new name in non-drowsy relief, Allivert. New Allivert starts dissolving the instant it touches your tongue, without water. So you can take Allivert inside, outside, in your car, wherever you are. Allivert is non-drowsy 24-hour relief in a quick-dissolving tablet. New Allivert, allergy medicine you can take right when you need it, wherever you are. Allivert, use as directed.
Hamas is calling a truce, it appears. The Palestinian militant group today released a statement agreeing to suspend all its attacks on Israel. Hamas founder Sheikh Ahmed Yassin said the decision was reached after Hamas studied all the latest developments in the so-called roadmap to peace. Telemarketers may have a tougher time now selling their wares over the phone with the launch of the national Do Not Call list. That registry is designed to keep telemarketers from calling consumers who don't want to be bothered at home. President Bush today formally announced creation of that list, which will actually take effect beginning October 1st.
My cat Boots got stuck way up in a tree. My dad saw how scared I was. He climbed up there and got it down. I feel bad. I know he hurt his back. I saw him call the doctor.
The moment of choice. What will the doctor give you, Tylenol or Advil? Truth is, doctors nationwide choose Advil most for muscle aches, strains, and sprains. Advil can give you longer-lasting relief than Tylenol on tough pain.
Boots is okay. Dad's feeling better. How great is that?
For better relief, advance to Advil.
The head of NASA says he agrees with the chairman of the Columbia Accident Investigation Board, who says upgrades and modifications to the shuttle fleet will likely be completed by next spring. More from correspondent Rory O'Neill.
NASA Administrator Sean O'Keefe says new limits on future shuttle flights, like the elimination of nighttime launches, will cut into the number of days that an orbiter can lift off.
The first one that meets the time frame of what it would take to correct the hardware, put the process issues in place, the earliest opportunity is December 18th. The next opportunity is December 19th. Then you don't get another opportunity until late January.
O'Keefe says shuttle upgrades will go beyond the recommendations of the Columbia Board and will include a comprehensive assessment of all policies and procedures in the space agency. Rory O'Neill at the Kennedy Space Center.
And the House and Senate have put their stamp of approval on a bill to add a prescription drug benefit to Medicare. The measure squeaked through the House by a single vote last night. The Senate overwhelmingly passed a similar measure. The two bills must now head to committee to be reconciled before being sent to President Bush. I'm Corey Morris. This is IE America Radio Network News.
Hi, I'm Bobby Likas with today's Car Clinic Minute. Think of your favorite child. Now think of your favorite child again in your car. What can you do to ensure that child will live to become a favorite adult? When I come back, I'll tell you.
Doug is frugal.
Well, money doesn't grow on trees, you know.
The problem is, Doug is about to buy a used car.
Yep, and I'm going to get ripped off!
And Doug doesn't know about Carfax, which lets you check a used car's history to see if it's been in an accident, has accurate mileage, stuff like that. So you know your money's well spent.
So I might save thousands?
Exactly, Doug. Just go to CARFAX.com or ask your dealer for a Carfax vehicle history report.
Hey, how about we go halfsies on the car?
How about nunsies?
How about somesies?
No. Carfax, the truth about used cars.
How do you protect your most precious cargo? Safety seats, which reduce infant death risk by 69% and toddler by 47%. Infant seats from birth to 1 year should be installed rear-facing in the back seat. These often convert to front-facing for toddlers under 4 years and 40 pounds. Booster seats are suitable for children 4 to 8. But not until a child is over 80 pounds and 8 years old are regular seat belts proper restraints. Whatever their age, when you think of your favorite children, picture them buckled up, then do it. I'm Bobby Likas. Like us, you'll love us.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
For a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, this is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman. To talk with Tom Hartman, call 1-800-TALK-YES. Here's Tom.
And welcome back to the Tom Hartman Radio Program on the IE America Radio Network, broadcasting coast to coast on terrestrial radio stations, live from the depths of outer space on the Sirius radio satellite, Sirius Channel 145, and broadcasting live on the Internet from IEAmericaRadio.com, RadioPower.org, and archived at WhiteRoseSociety.org. Well, hopefully this discussion that we had in the last hour about, you know, what is... How is the Constitution? What is the purpose of the Constitution? What's the relationship between this and this ruling that we had? Will help you when you're reading the newspaper to figure out which of these politicians have any understanding of this at all. It's just extraordinary to me how many people are completely missing the boat. In that same vein, moving on in another direction. Oh, and by the way, if you'd like to join our chat room today, we've got a lively discussion going there. Go to TomHartmanShow.com or TomHartman.com. Click on the link to the radio show and click on the chat button. It'll drop you into our chat room. You can participate in the conversation there that's also live on the screen in front of me. And if you'd like to be on the program today, our number is 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937. Now, Nike Corporation got nailed by this fellow Mark Caskey, an activist out in California, who said that they were engaging in deceptive trade practices. They were claiming that they were simply running a PR campaign. And, we'll get into their claims in just a moment. And this went before the Supreme Court, and this was also ruled on yesterday. Actually, it wasn't ruled on. The court chose not to rule on it. And we have today Lisa Danitz, who is a staff attorney with the National Voting Rights Institute, where her legal practice focuses on campaign finance litigation. In the recent Nike versus Caskey Supreme Court case, she was the author of an... Lisa, you're going to have to tell me, is this amicus or amicus brief?
Amicus or amicus.
Either one.
By both.
Ah, okay, because I've heard both over the years, and I didn't go to law school, so...
It's Latin, so I think it can go by either.
It's a dead language. Anyhow, you wrote this on behalf of ReclaimDemocracy.org, Jeff Milchen's extraordinary organization. I recommend people check out ReclaimDemocracy.org on the web. The brief argued that Mr. Caskey should be able to proceed with his lawsuit against Nike because corporations are not entitled to the same First Amendment protections as individuals. Lisa, welcome to the Tom Hartman program, and let us know what happened yesterday in the Supreme Court with regard to this.
Thank you for having me on the show. What happened yesterday is the court essentially issued a one-sentence order saying, oops, we made a mistake, we should never have heard this appeal.
That's interesting.
The effect of that is to reinstate the California Supreme Court opinion, which had said that Mr. Caskey could go ahead with his lawsuit against Nike.
Right. And what this now do you think that this this oops that the Supreme Court came up with was the result of their having read things like your amicus brief that might have educated them? For example, I'm thinking of Rehnquist in his dissent in the 1978 Boston versus Bilotti case, where in his dissent he goes on and on about how back in 1886, without benefit of discussion or debate in open court, this court ruled that corporations are persons, when in fact the court never ruled that. It was simply in the headnote of the ruling. But the ruling itself contradicted that. And I'm assuming that some of this stuff re-educated the court, and maybe they've decided this is a hot potato that they don't want to handle, or it's not. I mean, what do you think was behind this?
Well, you know, it's hard to know definitively. There are some clues, and of course, we like to think that our amicus brief played a role in the court's outcome. But you know, there were a number of amicus briefs, and I think in addition to hours doing this, they all pointed out the real problems in deciding this case, that this really is a hot potato. Do you want to extend this kind of protection to corporations? What are the implications of doing so? And I think as a result, the court decided, you know what, we don't have to decide this. Why don't we pass on this for another day? And in fact, accompanying the one-sentence order, which was on behalf of six of the nine justices, there was a concurring opinion written by Justice Stevens, joined by Justice Ginsburg and in part by Justice Souter, going into some of the reasons why the court should never have accepted the appeal.
Oh, that's interesting. Lisa, can I pause you there just
sure.
for a second? I want to make sure that our listeners understand how important this thing is, because it sounds like maybe we're just discussing some arcane legal minutia of the Supreme Court. Nike essentially was arguing not that they had... Caskey's assertion was that Nike was lying to people when they were claiming that they'd cleaned up their sweatshop labor practices, that they were engaging in deceptive trade speech. And Nike, instead of saying, no, we didn't lie, we can prove we told the truth, here's the, you know, you can go visit the sweatshops, instead of saying that, Nike said, we have the right to lie. I mean, they didn't say it in those kind of words. It was all couched in legalese. But essentially, they said, under the First Amendment, we have the right of free speech. The right of free speech, this court has ruled in the past, includes the right to speak, the right to not speak, and the right to, and they're saying, and the right to tell a lie. If I have the, you know, if I'm not under oath, I have, as a human being, the right to lie. I can say to my wife, hey, that looks great on you, you know, even no matter what. I mean, without the right to lie, life would be pretty tough for most human beings. And corporations are saying that they have to have that, too. And that's this is an essential core issue that has to do with corporate power in America, and that is whether corporations have the right to intentionally deceive us. And when you think about news corporations, media corporations, then it gets really, really strange. So now you were saying that the court kicked this thing back, and there was a clue from these three justices who are generally perceived as the more liberal on the court about why.
Right, and actually, if it's okay, before I get to that, I want to piggyback on what you're saying about the implications of the case if the court had decided it. I mean, this is the dismissal of the appeal was a victory for those of us who believe that corporations should be under a little bit more control of the people
right.
rather than the people being in control of corporations. The danger, if the court had decided the First Amendment issue, was that they weren't really headed in a direction to explicitly consider this corporate personhood issue, you know, that corporations and people have the same rights.
Under the Bill of Rights, yeah.
Right. Caskey's lawyer basically said the statements at issue, the lies that Nike told, are commercial speech, and so they're subject to regulation. But even Caskey's lawyer said, if this is not commercial speech, then Nike wins. And Nike got up there and said, this is, you know, important speech about public issues, and So we have a free hand to say whatever we want. And if the court had gone in that direction, the court would have decided that corporations have the same First Amendment rights as you and me without really considering the effect of that.
Which, in the opinion of all of us who are concerned about corporate power in America, and that includes many of us who are not anti-corporate. I think most people who are concerned about corporate power are not anti-corporate. They're just concerned about very large corporations usurping government and seizing control of we the people. And this would be a disaster, in our opinion.
Absolutely, which is why it was so wonderful that the court dismissed the appeal. I mean, the conventional wisdom had been that the court would not have accepted the appeal for review if they were not leaning toward Nike.
Well, keep in mind, every newspaper in America, every major corporate-owned newspaper in America, editorialized in favor of Nike in this case and said that the Supreme Court should grant corporations the right to lie. And in fact, Jeff and I co-authored a rebuttal to one of the New York Times op-eds and or editorials, and nobody would run it. We tried to place it with major newspapers, and you know, we're not non-credible folks. Our side of this issue, that human rights should be only for human beings, just didn't make it into the mainstream corporate-owned media.
Right, not at all. And actually, if you look at some of the coverage today, the media portrays this only as the forces of anti-globalization against the forces of free speech. There's no portrayal of this issue of corporate power.
Right. In fact, in the Wall Street Journal today, their editorial calls Mark Caskey, and I quote, an anti-globalization nut, end quote. Anyhow, you were saying there was a clue as to why these three justices, why
so,
they kicked this thing back.
Going back to that clue, Justice Stevens' opinion gave three reasons. Now, two of them were more or less technical, saying, you know, there was no final judgment below, and I don't really need to go into the details of that and what it means specifically, except that to me that indicates they were looking for a reason not to decide the case, because at the argument, in my opinion, they didn't seem very receptive to that idea. And in fact, it's something that they explicitly considered back in January. I mean, when Nike made the petition for the court to hear the appeal, Caskey had the opportunity to say, no, you shouldn't hear the appeal, and made the same arguments, and the court said, no, we're going to hear the appeal. So they had already rejected those arguments once. So the fact that two of those reasons were given for the dismissal, I think, is an indication that the court didn't want to decide the case. But the third reason gets more directly to that point. Justice Stevens says, this is a complex and novel issue of First Amendment law, and as an institution, the court doesn't like to decide things we don't have to. And
sure,
so we should wait until this case has kind of gone through the entire litigation process. It's important to remember that the case hadn't actually happened. The Caskey's lawsuit was dismissed right after he filed the complaint, so nobody knew what information would come out during the trial process.
The merits of the case have not been debated yet.
Sorry?
The merits of the case have not been debated.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so the court basically said, this is too important of an issue for us not to have all the facts before us. Go back, have the case, and then maybe we'll consider it again.
Great. We're speaking with Lisa, is it Danitz?
Danitz,
a staff attorney with the National Voting Rights Institute, and she wrote one of the amicus briefs in the Nike versus Caskey case, or Caskey versus Nike, I thought it was, and on behalf of ReclaimDemocracy.org. And Lisa, when we come back from this break, if you can stay with us just for another 5 or 10 minutes, I'd like to ask you about your campaign finance litigation. I'm curious about that. And you're listening to the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Stay tuned. We'll be back in just a few minutes.
What's wrong?
My knees are killing me. I shouldn't have jogged this morning.
Today's my party.
You gonna be okay?
I should be. The party's hours away.
And we have tons to do.
The moment of choice, Tylenol or Advil. Which works better to get you through the day? Truth is, Advil can give you longer-lasting relief, better relief than Tylenol for tough muscle aches and pain. And Advil is gentle on your stomach.
Mom, you look like you're having fun.
I really am.
For better relief, advance to Advil.
Get the good stuff.
Right now would be a good time to come to Napa Auto Parts, because Valvoline All-Climate Motor Oil is just $1.39 a quart. This is the good stuff. Maybe that's why more ASE-certified master technicians use Valvoline Motor Oil in their own cars than any other brand of oil. And right now, if you buy a case of Valvoline All-Climate Motor Oil, you'll get a $5 gas card by mail.
Get the good stuff.
Napa. Get the good stuff.
Do you want to own a computer but have less than perfect credit? Bad credit? No credit? No problem. If you have a checking or savings account and can afford a payment of as little as $35 a week for just 12 months, Blue Hippo Funding says you're approved. Guaranteed. You heard right. You're approved for a brand new name brand computer. Call 1-800-823-0157 right now. If you can afford a payment of as little as $35 a week for just 12 months and have a checking or savings account, you're already approved. Guaranteed. Call 1-800-823-0157 right now and tell us where you want your brand new name brand computer delivered. If you can afford $35 a week for just 12 months and have a checking or savings account, your brand new state-of-the-art PC will be on its way. Guaranteed. Bad credit, no problem. Blue Hippo Funding says you're approved for the computer of your dreams. Guaranteed. Call right now, 1-800-823-0157.
Sherwood Baylert is a member of Congress and, despite that, not a bad guy. He's a New York Republican who's been in the House for more than 20 years, and he loves the place. Fine. It's said that some people who muck manure for a living come to love the smell, so everyone to their own taste. But I thought Sherwood had been sniffing the congressional perfumes a bit too deeply when he recently declared that the House is, quote, the one institution in the whole wide world that's the personification of this great democracy of ours. Democracy? The great majority of Americans are factory workers, clerks, cab drivers, dirt farmers, teachers, Main Street merchants, programmers, waitresses, health care workers, and the like. How many of them serve in Congress, or are even marginally represented by those who serve there? About 70% of Americans make less than $50,000 a year. How many of our Congress critters go to Washington from such an income perspective? Indeed, the U.S. Public Interest Research Group reports that nearly half of the newly elected members of Congress are millionaires, which 99.5% of Americans are not. And if the House is so representative of our people, why didn't we get a pay raise 4 of the last 5 years as they gave themselves? Why don't we have top-flight health coverage paid for by taxpayers as they do? Why don't we get golden, no-worry pensions as they do? Phil Graham is one example of congressional apartness from the rest of America. The Texas senator, who just retired, opposed any government program to help regular folks while he slavishly served the corporate powers that financed his elections. He became a millionaire while in office. And now that he's out, we the people will send him a retirement check of $78,534 every year. He'll get more doing nothing than 80% of us will make working day in and day out. This is Jim Hightower saying, that's the personification of plutocracy, not of democracy.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Strangest bumper music. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Radio Program on the IE America Radio Network. Broadcasting live coast to coast, we've got Lisa Danitz on the line. She's a staff attorney with the National Voting Rights Institute. Lisa, is there a website for the National Voting Rights Institute or for the work that you're doing?
www.nvri.org.
Great. NVRI.org, so people can find out more about you and about the work that you're doing and the things that you've written. In our chat room, a couple of people had a couple of questions. We'll skip the discussion about Jell-O wrestling and let's see. Does this mean, one of the people said, does this mean that corporations now don't have the same rights as people? Is that one of the consequences of this?
That's a little bit up in the air. I mean, in some respects, this outcome avoided the issue. Some would argue that the law, at least in the First Amendment context, already creates this parallel. I don't agree with that, and I think that it's really important that in any case where the issue comes up, somebody has a voice in the mix saying, you have never recognized that corporations and individuals have the same First Amendment rights. It's true that the court has recognized a significant number of constitutional rights for corporations. Corporations do have certain First Amendment rights. They can fund campaigns relating to ballot initiatives. That was the Bellotti case you were talking about earlier.
Right.
They have equal protection protections. They're protected by the Due Process Clause. So in many areas of the law, the court has recognized that corporations are people. And in my view, that's a problem. But they haven't ruled that in every instance corporations are the same as people.
Good. I agree with you. And I wrote a book about this called Unequal Protection, The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights for anybody who really wants to get into the minutiae of corporate personhood.
And in fact, we cited that book in our brief.
Really?
Yes.
Wow. Well, thank you. I'm impressed.
You're welcome.
That's incredible. Thank you. Let's see. One other question here that somebody had. Can the megacorps be busted today? I assume that means, is it possible that we could see a return to the Sherman Antitrust Act, sort of, you know, like when Jimmy Carter broke up AT&T? Is it possible that some of these huge monopolistic behemoths that came about as a result of Ronald Reagan essentially suspending all enforcement of the Sherman Act and its errors. Do you think that that's going to be reversed anytime soon?
Well, I'm not an antitrust law expert, but I can tell you that from my perspective, antitrust activity in large part depends on who the president is and what the view of the Department of Justice or the Federal Trade Commission under any given administration is. So you'll have a higher level of antitrust activity under certain administrations rather than others.
Right.
So I think to a large extent that will be determined by the political process.
In other words, get out and vote.
Yes.
Okay, and Z. March Hare says, Tom, I don't know the name of the case. It's the Boston versus Bellotti, but I'd like to hear her take on the idea of campaign contributions equaling free speech. We have about a minute left here, Lisa.
Sure. It's unfortunately there's only a minute left since that's the bread and butter of what we do. But there is a 1976 case called Buckley v. Valeo that at the moment sets out a lot of the outlines regarding campaign finance. In that context, the court said campaign contributions implicate the First Amendment, but they can be regulated. And so we're doing our best to make sure that they continue to be regulated.
Great. Lisa Danitz is a staff attorney with the National Voting Rights Institute, NVRI.org. Lisa, thank you very much for being with us today. I appreciate you coming on the program. This is the Tom Hartman Program, The Vast Radical Middle Conspiracy. Take no imitations. We'll be right back.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Big Burger chain went from corporate bad guy to good citizen by doing the right thing for the environment. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. 8 years ago, McDonald's was the most despised company in Sweden.
People really didn't feel they were a good neighbor. They weren't a good company. They weren't doing the right thing for the community.
That's George Basile of The Natural Step, an environmental research and consulting firm. Basile says McDonald's rated poorly on environmental matters, but he says the Swedish chain was willing to take a hard look at itself, and it hired his firm to help.
How did they get their stuff to the right place at the right time in a sustainable way? What about energy? What about how they cleaned within their stores? And, of course, most importantly, what about the agricultural system? How could McDonald's be an engine for sustainable agriculture? Now, you can imagine, these are not questions that they would typically ask.
Basile says the company began to use more rail transport instead of trucking. It created a new line of non-toxic cleaners for use in its stores, and it responded to concerns about packaging waste.
They became the largest educator on recycling in the country because so many people came through the stores, and they set up shops to show people how to recycle the products that they were buying at McDonald's.
Basile says the company became the largest purchaser of organic agricultural goods in the country. He says McDonald's has improved its public image in Sweden and even prompted a national discussion on phasing out certain agricultural chemicals.
So that's one example of how a company that has a big brand and has a big pull can make both big differences inside itself, but also even big differences within the system.
Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Hi, Truth Seekers. This is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive, political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back to Uncommon Sense from the Radical Middle, helping you win the water cooler wars. This is the Tom Hartman Radio Program on the IE America Radio Network. The White House said on Thursday that it stands by its conclusion that mobile trailers found in Iraq were intended for making biological weapons, even though the State Department's intelligence division says, nope, ain't the case, and British intelligence has definitely concluded that the trailers were made and used for the purpose which every single captured Iraqi scientist, regardless of level of torture or inducement offered, has said, which is that they were there to manufacture hydrogen to fill up weather balloons that were used for sighting, artillery, big guns. So the White House is, you remember President Bush went on Polish television when these things were found and said, see, we found the weapons of mass destruction. Of course, there was no weapon in any of them. The White House even now is not saying that these are weapons of mass destruction, because the only chemicals and the only compounds that were found in these trailers were those necessary to manufacture hydrogen. Period. But they're still saying, well, it could have been used for, and therefore it meets our criteria. We really didn't lie. We just sort of deceived you. And I think that quote from Republican Senator Lindsey Graham is so important. Lindsey Graham, the President of the United States, sits atop of the legal pyramid. If there's reasonable doubt about his ability to faithfully execute the laws of the land, our future would be better off if that individual is removed. And let me tell you where it all comes down to for me. If you can go back and explain to your children and your constituents how you can be truthful and misleading at the same time, good luck. Says Lindsey Graham. Amen. Some interesting news. I just want to hop around a couple of things here with this half hour. Do corporations have the right to lie? We talked about that in the first half hour. If you have any further thoughts or comments on that or questions about it, you're welcome to call us. 1-800-TALK-YES is the number, 1-800-825-5937. Drop into the chat room, go to TomHartmanShow.com and click on the chat button, and that'll get you in there. Lively discussion, mostly right now about Clarence Thomas and weapons of mass destruction and Anita Hill. Interesting discussions going on here. This is something that was in the New Scientist. I received my current edition of the New Scientist yesterday, and it's one of my favorite magazines. It's a science publication out of Great Britain, out of the United Kingdom, and one of the very best, in my opinion, of the, just good solid science. And it's not, and it doesn't have to have the problem of so many American science publications of having to in some way respond to pressure from American pharmaceutical manufacturers or polluters or whatever, or dance to political agendas. And you just get this really solid news. And there's just a startling, startling article in the current issue of New Scientist. And let me get to that right after this call. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number. And Jeff in Denver's on the line. Jeff, welcome to the Tom Hartman radio program.
Hi. When you're talking about Clarence Thomas and the right to privacy and such things, not mention the Constitution. I think one of the important things we have to look at in our Constitution is, again, how you mentioned, it's really putting limitations on government. Our Constitution does not, and it differs from other constitutions in some places, it does not tell anything about citizen responsibility. It's basically just a series of constraints for the government.
That's right. It doesn't talk about citizen responsibility, and it doesn't talk about citizen rights, other than in the Bill of Rights, where if you read the, it's fascinating to read the actual correspondence between Jefferson and Madison, or read Thomas Jefferson's autobiography. He's got an entire chapter in there about, in fact, I was reading it this morning. I thought about printing it out and reading some of it on the air, but I didn't. It's just, you know, sometimes the prose is so dense that it just doesn't work well on the air. But basically what he was saying was he was in France when the Constitution was written, and Madison sent him a copy of it, and he read it, and he thought, this is great, but it doesn't. It operates from the assumption that humans have rights, and the assumption that those rights are inalienable, because those assumptions are explicitly stated in the Declaration of Independence, and, of course, in the preamble to the Constitution, which reads, "We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America." In other words, there's this assumption that it is acknowledging the rights that the Declaration of Independence, which Thomas Jefferson was the author of, referenced. But it doesn't explicitly come out and say it. And Jefferson was concerned that future generations may miss that. And he said, you know, we need to, this is not his way of saying it. His way of saying it was much more flowery. But basically, we need to make sure that nobody misunderstands this, that this document is clearly defining and constraining the power of federal authority. And in the Ninth Amendment, it says, and if we're not saying it, it's our ability, then it goes to the people. And if the people don't take it or have it, then it goes to the states. That's the Tenth Amendment. And he said, we just need to make this explicit. We need to make it absolutely unambiguous, and that's the Bill of Rights. But the Constitution could have stood without the Bill of Rights. Even Jefferson said that, although he threatened to veto it, you know, to get the Virginia delegation to fight against it if it wasn't added. I'm ranting. your point, Jeff.
Yeah, I think what's shown by this is that Scalia and Thomas, from this perspective, have a fundamental misunderstanding of the Constitution.
That's right. That was my point. And I'm concerned that O'Connor does as well. If you read her agreement Her agreement is basically saying that the legislatures have the right to decide what people do in private, and that we have just, as a country, decided that homosexuality is no longer as offensive as we thought it was at one point in the past, and so therefore we're going to allow it now. And that's not what the Constitution says. The Constitution doesn't say that the government has the right to limit personal private behavior. If anything, it says the opposite, or it clearly defines and implies the opposite.
Yes, well, I just hope we all communicate to our representatives about what we want for the Supreme Court.
Yeah, and let's hope that, number one, our representatives actually begin to have some fathoming, some understanding of the Constitution of the United States. And number two, that we start teaching this stuff in our schools again. We have lost our civics classes. Jeff, thanks for the call. I appreciate your bringing us back to that, because this is such an important point. This is such an important point that people understand what is the foundation of democracy in the United States, or of our constitutionally limited republic, or whatever you want to call it, whatever language games you want to play. What is the predicating assumption? The predicating assumption is that humans have rights, and that when humans create institutions, whether those institutions are corporations or churches or civic clubs or nonprofits or corporations, those institutions have only privileges. And those privileges are defined by we, the people who have the rights, even if one of those institutions is government itself. And what the Constitution does is it defines the privileges that we, the holders of the rights, are granting to our government. And in the Bill of Rights, it says, and there's some privileges we are not giving you. And it says nothing about, well, you have the right to privacy, you have the right to have children, you have the right to get married, you have the right to buy whatever you want for lunch. Of course it doesn't say that, because it's not about giving us rights. The Constitution doesn't give us rights. In the mind of the founders, the Creator, creation, God gave us those rights. Thomas Jefferson was not a deist. He took the New Testament and stripped out all of Jesus' miracles and rewrote it. It's called the Jefferson Bible. You can still find it in print. But they used the language of, you know, the Creator and God. But there was even a dispute about that. But there was no dispute about the fact that every living thing, or that humans, anyway, Jefferson thought every living thing was born with certain inalienable rights. Others, like Adams, thought that only humans were, and that it was given by a particular deity. But in any case, there's no disputing that. Anyhow, let me get back to this story in The New Scientist. Last month, this is from their editorial that opens the issue. Last month, health officials in California announced two staggering pieces of news. The first was that the number of Californian children diagnosed with autism has nearly doubled in just 4 years. The second was that nobody knows why. Now, autism is a really serious condition. It is a neurological disorder. It has been believed to be genetic, but it appears that there are these skyrocketing cases of autism. There were some, when this first was coming out, that were saying, who were saying that, well, it's just the doctors are getting better at diagnosing it, and that's why we're seeing more and more, but same with ADHD and stuff like that. But now it's becoming clear that this goes beyond our ability to diagnose it. So what might be causing it? Well, this study that just came in is mind-boggling. And this has to do with, you'll remember back a year or two ago, before all the war talk started and George Bush was successful in getting off the front pages of the newspaper, the fact that he was eviscerating the Environmental Protection Act and increasing the amounts of mercury that could be emitted into the air by power plants and increasing the amount of arsenic that could be in our water and all these other toxins, that there was this big debate about mercury. There was here in Vermont, our legislature passed a law saying that any product that had mercury in it, which includes, for example, fluorescent light bulbs, thermometers, had to be labeled with a warning and had to be recyclable so that mercury didn't make it back out into the atmosphere. And the trade association for the manufacturers of these products sued the state of Vermont. This went through the courts for a couple of years, and it was just recently resolved in favor of Vermont. But as far as I know, we are the only state right now that requires this sort of thing. Well, here's the study. I'll just read you from the New Scientist or little bits of it. A study of mercury levels in the baby hair of children who were later diagnosed with autism has produced startling results. The babies had far lower levels of mercury in their hair than other infants, leading to speculation that autistic children either do not absorb mercury or, more likely, cannot excrete it. What they found was that the, quote, normal children had 3.63 parts per million of mercury in their hair, whereas the autistic children, that's 3.63. The autistic children had 0.47 parts per million, much less mercury in their hair. Now, when they looked at the mothers, they discovered that the mothers had the same levels of mercury, or in some cases, more mercury in the mothers of autistic children. But it wasn't making it into the children's hair. Now, hair is one of the ways, hair, feces, and urine are the and perspiration are the primary ways that the body excretes heavy metals. So if mercury is showing up in the hair, it indicates that the body's actually getting rid of it. Now, early on, years ago, they'd look at this mercury in the hair and they'd say, oh, this is an indication of the mercury levels in the bloodstream. But it turns out that apparently it's really an indication of the body's ability to get rid of it. And if the body can't get rid of mercury, then it gets overwhelmed by it. In fact, when they looked at children with mild, moderate, and severe autism, they found that the ones with mild autism had 0.79 parts per million, the ones with moderate autism 0.46 parts per million, and severe autism 0.21 parts per million of mercury in their hair. In other words, the more severe the autism, the less of the mercury was being excreted. And yet when they looked at the mothers, their mercury levels were all the same. So they're saying, and where did the mothers get their mercury? According to the article, most of this mercury came from the mothers. The main sources of exposure, according to the team, were mercury amalgam fillings, Rho-D immunoglobulin injections containing thimerosal given to rhesus Rh-negative mothers, and heavy consumption of fish, defined as more than 5 fish meals a month. Now, the thimerosal thing is real interesting. Last year, one of the groups, I am drawing a blank on which one it was, but one of the public, I think it was the Center for Science and the Public Interest, one of the groups that tracks this kind of stuff noticed that somebody in the Congress, somebody in the United States Senate, had slipped into a large piece of legislation one little sentence that gave the vaccine manufacturers immunity from lawsuits for having used thimerosal, which is a mercury-based preservative, in their vaccines. And this organization was offering a $10,000 reward for anybody who could identify which senator had snuck this into this bill, because it got in and it got passed. And it was a billion-dollar boon to the vaccine manufacturers, who many say should have known better. Turns out it was Bill Frist. And this is going to be a hot one. This is going to be a real hot one. So there's that as a source of mercury, which is the childhood vaccines and the Rh negative vaccine or immunoglobulin that's given to mothers to prevent an immune reaction if their blood is different from the baby's. The article goes on to say mercury is one of the suspected causes of autism, with proponents arguing that there are many similarities between autism and mercury poisoning. Remember Mad as a Hatter? Alice in Wonderland, the Mad Hatter? Mad Hatters were called Mad Hatters because they used mercury to cure beaver pelts back in the 17th, 18th, and 19th centuries. And the beaver skin, when it's been worked down to a very, 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 very thin layer and kind of shaved on the top, that's what they make those top hats out of. They were called beaver hats. They were actually top hats. They weren't like, you know, coonskin caps like Daniel Boone. They were these formal top hats were made of, and also mercury was used with felt in hats to hold the felt together. Felt is basically all these little particles of cotton and whatnot that are you know, just kind of thrown together, bound together, and mercury is used in the process of forming and shaping hats. And so the hatters, handling mercury all the time, became insane. They became mad as a hatter. So now you've got some physicians like Holmes, this one physician who's quoted in this study, who are actually using chelating agents, metal binding agents, to try to rid the bodies of these kids of heavy metals. And there are other people who are saying, wait a minute, that could be dangerous because you're throwing mercury into the bloodstream when you do that. Nobody knows what's going to happen. Lots of interesting research now. This study has just kicked the door open. But here's the kicker. Guess how much mercury... Mercury is not naturally in our atmosphere. The only way mercury gets in our atmosphere is from burning oil and coal in power plants and in automobiles. That's the primary way that it gets in the atmosphere. Guess how many tons of mercury are in our atmosphere at any given second. I'll tell you when we come right back from this break. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
When I fell, my doctor didn't give me Tylenol. She gave me Advil.
I was surprised. My doctor gave me Advil for my back.
Advil is my doctor's choice for muscle pain.
Truth is, doctors nationwide choose Advil most for tough muscle pain, strains, and sprains. Advil can give you longer-lasting relief than Tylenol on tough pain.
Now I always make sure I have Advil in the house.
Make the doctor's choice your choice. For better relief, advance to Advil.
Get the good stuff.
Right now would be a good time to come to Napa Auto Parts, because Valvoline All Climate Motor Oil is just $1.39 a quart. This is the good stuff. Maybe that's why more ASE certified master technicians use Valvoline Motor Oil in their own cars than any other brand of oil. And right now, if you buy a case of Valvoline All Climate Motor Oil, you'll get a $5 gas card by mail.
Get the good stuff.
Napa, get the good stuff.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back, and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now. Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide, and you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Another audio clip from the production meeting.
Doug Steffen.
What production meeting?
The drive. You know how many radio stations we're on? We must be doing something right, guys.
Imagine if we really tried.
Yeah.
If we don't care, and it shows.
Doug Steffen's Good Day.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Animal Talk, not your father's radio show about animals.
Welcome to Lifestyles of the Wet and Stinky. We're looking at fishy fat cats and wealthy crustaceans. This is Bloodsucking Leech here, sending you algae-covered wishes and caviar-laying dreams.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
All right, boys, come on.
Show.
Well, let's move on to somebody who is evil but very bright. That would be Ari Fleischer at the briefing today.
The job of anybody who is the White House press secretary is to faithfully articulate what the president is thinking and why he's thinking it. And that's what I do for a living.
Yeah, right. The job of the press secretary is to faithfully articulate what the president is thinking?
When do I get to my Game Boy? Hey, it's time for lunch. I want to take a nap. How do you spell Putin? Let me see. Who's the president of Afghanistan?
You know he tried to kill my dad?
Oh, my God. There's Laura with my milk. Faithfully articulate what the president is thinking?
Alrighty, then.
The Mike Malloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Talk radio for the rest of us. This is the Tom Hartman Radio Program on the IE America Radio Network. Thousands of tons of mercury have polluted the world's atmosphere, reaching remote regions such as the Arctic and altitudes of over 7 kilometers, according to the New Scientist. The atmosphere contains more than 2,500 tons of the toxic element, according to the Journal of Geophysical Research. Mercury gets caught up in clouds and then falls to Earth as rain. The U.S. Public Interest Research Group reported that mercury poisoning of fish in the country's rivers has become a serious risk to health. 2,500 tons of mercury are floating around in the air at any given moment. I said when I was running for president, said George Bush on April 2nd of last year, that I supported ethanol, and I meant it. I support it now. There was an applause there, and he says, I support it now, not because not only do I know it's important for the ag sector of our economy, it's an important part of making sure we become less reliant on foreign sources of energy, and it doesn't throw mercury into the air. However, in George Bush's 2004 budget, he proposed to eliminate entirely funding for the bioenergy program that funds the Dakota ethanol plant that he was standing in when he made that speech 2 weeks earlier. When are people going to get it? Got a natural gas crunch here. This falls into the category of lookout. Back in 1997, I wrote a book called Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight being oil, and talked about how we are running out of oil and natural gas. We got a lot of coal left, but we're running out of oil and natural gas. And I suggested that within 5 years you would see oil wars starting. The book is out there. You can see it. This natural gas crunch, Steve Korick, a friend of mine in Chicago, sent me this note. The natural gas crunch is coming, and it's rising world oil supplies are the two crises that the Bush administration was trying to hold off until the next election as part of their Afghanistan and Iraq takeover strategy. Afghanistan offers the land route to set up a pipeline to Central Asian natural gas, and of course, Iraq holds the world's second biggest reserves of oil. The Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Thanks for joining us.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
truth seekers. This is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive, political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
This is IE America Radio Network News. I'm Corey Morris. The Palestinian group Hamas is apparently calling a truce today. The group released a statement earlier agreeing to suspend all its attacks on Israel. Hamas founder Sheikh Ahmed Yassin said the decision was reached after his organization studied all the latest developments in the so-called roadmap to peace. Former Senator Strom Thurmond is dead today. He was 100 years old. Correspondent Allison Brown now has a look back at Thurmond's nearly half century on Capitol Hill.
J. Strom Thurmond died peacefully at the Edgehill County Hospital in Edgehill, South Carolina.
The news of Strom Thurmond's death reached the Senate floor as lawmakers were finishing up work on Medicare reform. Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist, who broke the passing to his colleagues, says there will be no roll call vote today and is allowing time for senators to pay tribute to the South Carolinian who spent 48 years in the chamber. Upon hearing the news, South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham says Thurmond was an icon to his constituents.
And his legacy in my state, across party lines, across racial lines, across regional lines, was that he was the go-to guy.
Funeral arrangements expected to be announced later today. Allison Brown, Washington.
U.S. military officials say they still don't know what exactly happened to two American soldiers who disappeared along with their Humvee near Baghdad earlier this week. The vice chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Peter Pace, says the military doesn't know, quote, what happened or why. He did say, though, an active search for the two soldiers is continuing. Pace made his comments appearing along with Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld on Capitol Hill for talks with lawmakers earlier. Secretary Rumsfeld rejected charges post-war Iraq has turned into a guerrilla war zone. He suggested the transformation of Iraq is proceeding according to plan and argued that it will still take, quote, some time. Rumsfeld's comments, meanwhile, come following reports yet another American soldier was killed in Iraq during an ambush near the city of Najaf. That soldier investigating a car theft at the time he was attacked. And there's word another U.S. military troop member was shot in the head while shopping for DVDs at a store in Baghdad.
What's the big news in allergy medicine this season? It's a new name in non-drowsy relief, Allivert. New Allivert starts dissolving the instant it touches your tongue, without water. So you can take Allivert inside, outside, in your car, wherever you are. Allivert is non-drowsy 24-hour relief in a quick-dissolving tablet. New Allivert. Allergy medicine you can take right when you need it, wherever you are. Allivert. Use as directed.
This is Dr. Danny. Paul, you're on the air.
Hey, Dr. Danny.
Hey.
Man, listen. We're having a hard time potty training our son.
Well, that's a common problem. How old is your boy?
He's 26.
Paul, I have some bad news. At this age, potty training will be near impossible.
You're kidding me?
No, but Paul, I do have some good news.
All right, man. What?
I just saved a bunch of money on car insurance by switching to Geico.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
Both the House and Senate have approved legislation now for Medicare drug benefits. There are differences in the two measures still, and this morning President Bush urged lawmakers to resolve them quickly and get the bill to his desk. The House version relies more on introducing private market competition to Medicare than the Senate bill. Firefighters say they're gaining ground in the Aspen fire in southern Arizona that's been burning for over a week now. It's burned over 30,000 acres, but is said now to be 50% contained. In New Mexico, meanwhile, police are holding three suspects they believe are responsible for starting another wildfire earlier near Albuquerque.
My cat Boots got stuck way up in a tree. My dad saw how scared I was. He climbed up there and got it down. I feel bad. I know he hurt his back. I saw him call the doctor.
The moment of choice. What will the doctor give you, Tylenol or Advil? Truth is, doctors nationwide choose Advil most for muscle aches, strains, and sprains. Advil can give you longer-lasting relief than Tylenol on tough pain.
Boots is okay. Dad's feeling better. How great is that?
For better relief, advance to Advil.
President Bush has formally announced the creation of the much-anticipated National Do Not Call list. It's a registry designed to keep telemarketers from calling consumers who don't want to be bothered at home.
When Americans are sitting down to dinner or a parent is reading to his or her child, the last thing they need is a call from a stranger with a sales pitch.
The president said the registry is necessary so telemarketers will, quote, respect the privacy of citizens. Information about the Do Not Call registry can be found by calling 888-382-1222 or at www.donotcall.gov. And the U.S. Department of Labor has filed a lawsuit to recover some of the money lost when Enron's management allowed retirement plans to continue investing in company stock, even though they knew it was overvalued. Former employees and lawyers already involved in lawsuits against Enron and its former officers welcomed the new lawsuit, saying the action will only help their chances of recovering some of their losses while in court. I'm Corey Morris, and this is IE America Radio Network News.
Hi, I'm Bobby Likas with another Car Clinic Minute. Oxymorons. You know, the things that just don't seem to go together, like jumbo shrimp or deafening silence. How about new car and service manager? You'll be surprised. When I come back, I'll tell you all about it.
Rain-X now has a line of car waxes specially designed to protect your car's finish, not just to make it shiny and look good. Any wax can do that. Rain-X car waxes form a protective polymer seal over your car. The same way Rain-X windshield treatment repels water, Rain-X's new line of car waxes repel rain, road grime, UV rays, even tar. For a tough, protective barrier that does more than just keep your car's finish looking great, check out Rain-X's new line of car wax. Rain-X, protection you can see.
If thinking of the service manager while inking your new car deal seems like an oxymoron, think again. Though today's cars are certainly more roadworthy than their predecessors, they can still break. In fact, the experts at the L.A. Auto Show report that automotive repair is a $200 billion business, and one of every three cars serviced returns for additional work. So ask your new car salesperson for an introduction to the service manager. It's a small investment with a big payoff at repair time and for maintenance checks. I'm Bobby Likas. Likas, you'll love us. Brought to you by Rain-X Wax, the ultimate shield.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Covers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back to our program. This is the Tom Hartman program on the IE America Radio Network, broadcasting live coast to coast on terrestrial radio stations from the depths of outer space on the Sirius radio satellite, channel 145. And streaming live audio on the internet from IEAmericaRadio.com, RadioPower.org, and archived at WhiteRoseSociety.org. In this hour, we're going to get into the issues of a livable wage and minimum wage and what economics in America, let's say, the economics of rich and poor, the economics of working and investing and all that sort of thing. And to set this up, I'd like to just share with you a clip from the guy who basically invented the phrase livable wage. This was recorded sometime between 1905 and 1910. It was originally saved on one of those round Edison, the ones that look like a toilet paper tube. You know, they started out with wax and then they went to some kind of a plastic Edison recordings. And this is President Theodore Roosevelt.
We stand for a living wage,
he said.
Wages are subnormal if they fail to provide a living for those who devote their time and energy to industrial occupation.
So he's defined, you know, subnormal as, well, now let's find out what he says. What does Theodore Roosevelt in 1908, more or less, say is a living wage?
the monetary equivalent of a living wage varies according to local conditions, but must include enough to secure the elements of a normal standard of living.
Yeah, normal standard of living, number one.
A standard high enough to make morality possible.
A standard high enough to make morality possible. In other words, people don't have to steal to live.
Provide for education and recreation.
Provide for education and recreation to raise our children, to educate them, and I would suggest including college.
To care for immature members of the family.
To care for our children.
To maintain the family during periods of sickness.
To maintain the family during periods of sickness. In other words, to pay for health care.
And to permit a reasonable saving for old age.
And to permit a reasonable saving for old age. 1908, President Theodore Roosevelt coining the phrase a living wage. Today, our guest on the program is Holly Sklar, a writer whose op-eds for the Knight Ridder Tribune News Service have appeared in hundreds of newspapers. She's the co-author of Raise the Floor, Wages and Policies That Work for All of Us, a myth-busting book which argues, and I quote, a job should keep you out of poverty, not keep you in it. End quote. RaiseTheFloor.org is the website. Sklar's other books include Chaos or Community, Seeking Solutions, Not Scapegoats for Bad Economics, and Streets of Hope, The Fall and Rise of an Urban Neighborhood, the widely taught story of how the Dudley Street Neighborhood Initiative is rebuilding a long-impoverished Boston community as a dynamic urban village. Holly Sklar, welcome to the Tom Hartman Radio Program.
Thanks for having me. That was a great quote from Theodore Roosevelt. I certainly hadn't heard it in that recorded form before.
Oh, isn't that awesome? It's part of a larger speech where he just absolutely just goes after the large corporations in America. He goes into this long rant and about how Woodrow Wilson says that the history of democracy is the history of the constraint of government. And he said, in fact, Wilson is absolutely wrong. The history of democracy is the history of government intervening to restrain what Roosevelt called feudal forces. And he specifically identified very large corporations as being the element of feudalism in America. But anyway, it's
have heard, you may have already said this, but are you going to have that up on your website?
Actually, on my website, there is a program that I did about 3 weeks ago in which I played that whole clip, plus similar clips from Franklin Roosevelt, from Dwight Eisenhower, from Jack Kennedy. It's about an hour and a half program, and there's a demo program on TomHartmanShow.com that you can listen to, and it's got all that on it. And, you know, if you wanted to snatch those clips off it, you're welcome to.
That's great.
There's some great stuff in there. So, Holly, tell us about the idea of a living wage versus a minimum wage. Where did this come from in its modern incarnation, and what are the forces arrayed for and against it?
Well, in the modern incarnation, the minimum wage has... Let me start with minimum wage. The minimum wage federally was first passed back in 1938 during the Great Depression under the Franklin Roosevelt administration, part of the New Deal. It was, and this week is actually the anniversary of the signing of the Fair Labor Standards Act. And that act brought us restrictions on child labor, it brought us overtime legislation, and it brought us the first federal minimum wage, which was designed to give, in the language of that day, a fair day's pay for a fair day's work. Mm-hmm. And so the minimum wage, the idea was, you know, it's very important to remember it was passed during the Great Depression because it was seen as an anti-depression policy. It was a stimulus. It was meant to put this firm floor under workers. So the notion of a floor is very important. To strengthen the depressed economy by increasing consumer purchasing power, and the idea is then that will then lead to more demand and create new jobs, which will in turn, you know, create more demand and create new jobs in this nice cycle.
And it worked. It created a 40-year golden time, 50-year golden time in the history of the United States.
It was certainly part of that solution. And it was also designed, there's another phrase from that day that a lot of people don't realize originated back then, which is it was designed to stop a race to the bottom of employers moving to cheaper labor states. We hear that phrase, race to the bottom, talked a lot about today in terms of corporations moving or threatening to move to cheaper labor countries. But the minimum wage was designed to stop this race to the bottom among states. So it was very important to have it in place nationally and not just city or county or state by state.
Right.
So that's
now,
one of the, go ahead.
I'm sorry. Finish. I'm sorry.
Well, this is one of the ways it differs from the living wage in the modern incarnation, because the living wage movement, and it's a very big movement, had tremendous success, and it certainly made a huge difference in the lives of many people around the country. The living wage movement says, look, federally the minimum wage is too low. We're having a terrible time raising it. It's a political football, and I'll go back to that in a minute in terms of what's happened with the minimum wage nationally. But the idea was, goes back to a community labor, religious and other folks getting together back in Baltimore in 1994, was the first major living wage ordinance that was passed. And the idea was, we're going to figure out what does it take to live on locally, and we're going to say, get our city, in some cases counties, in some cases universities, to pass ordinances, to pass a kind of legislation that would say, if you do business within the university, if you're one of our employees, if you do business as a contractor, they take very different forms in different places, but you will have to pay a living wage to your employees, and it particularly applies to people with contracts with city government or county government.
Right.
And the living wage is often tied to the federal poverty line for a family of four, although not always. So there are now about 104 living wage ordinances passed around the country, all kinds of different
wage,
places.
A living wage, if it's tied to the poverty line, would work out to be around $8.50 to $9 an hour?
They most of them do. They range above $8, $9 an hour. Some of them then do local variations. So if you're in a particularly high-cost area, you'll have a higher living wage. And the other thing they often do, not always, but often put in a two-tier system where if you get health benefits, that's one living wage, mostly above $8, $9. But if you don't have health benefits through your employer, you may have a mandated living wage of over $10 an hour.
Right.
And there are about 70 campaigns or so going on right now.
Right. This is great, in my opinion. By the way, let me just a side note here. Jim in Hartford, Connecticut had called. And, Jim, I want to let you know I didn't ignore your call. I was going through the text here for my notes for this session with Holly, and I didn't notice on the screen that you were on hold, so I apologize. If anybody wants to call, 1-800-TALK-YES is the number, 1-800-825-5937. If you have a concern, a consideration, a comment, a debate, question, whatever, for me, for Holly, you're welcome to participate in the program. And I will do a better job of attending to this little pop-up screen I've got in front of me where the studio lets us know who's called. Holly, the folks on the right, the libertarians, the Ayn Rand folks, the conservatives, cons of all stripes, say government has no right messing in the marketplace. What do you say to that?
Well, of course, it's totally absurd. I mean, government messes, quote-unquote, in the marketplace in many ways. And one of the quotes that I love kind of complements your Teddy Roosevelt quote, and it complements some of other Franklin Roosevelt quotes, would be quoting Adam Smith, the famous Adam Smith, talking about the market.
In 1776.
Yeah, so in 1776, he writes in The Wealth of Nations, which some conservatives take as one of their Bibles, and it says in 1776, quote, "It is but equity that those who feed, clothe, and lodge the whole body of the people should have such a share of the produce of their own labor as to be themselves tolerably well-fed, clothed, and lodged."
Now, was he expressing I confess it's been 25 years since I read The Wealth of Nations, and I'm not sure that I ever actually read the whole thing all the way through. It's pretty dense, but I did. I have studied the book, but I don't recall. Was he speaking of this in an abstract philosophical sense, or was he making a specific proposal? I don't remember any specific proposals in Wealth of Nations about government participation in the economy beyond encouraging,
right.
In Ireland they make good wool and in England they make good milk, let's swap wool and milk kind of thing, you know.
Well, it's really a bottom line
trade.
Principle that he's talking about. And the government intervenes. I mean, if you carry it out to its extreme, the idea that you can't set a minimum wage, then you would have to be saying the government can't outlaw you being able to go ahead and dump whatever you want in the stream. I mean, many corporations for a long time, companies, businesses, felt that it was just perfectly okay to run around dumping toxic waste in rivers and playgrounds and oceans and everywhere, without restriction.
Well, back in the 19th century, too, there was a pervasive belief, and reality seemed to bear it out, that nature would simply take care of this stuff. That you could, you know, and people didn't realize how toxic a lot of these things were. I mean, we need to, I think, cut ourselves a little slack, or cut the industry a little bit of slack. But as we went into the 20th century,
in the recent era, yes, we have had you know, history after history of patterns of cover-ups when corporations knew perfectly well that they were dumping toxic waste.
Right,
and that it was indeed toxic and bad. And in any event, the government said, look, you know, this is harmful to society. This is harmful to particular people. This is harmful to the whole future of our ecosystem and so on. There are all kinds of reasons why you can't just go running around dumping toxic waste. And another example I use is, you know, you often hear about fast food industry being opposed to high minimum wages. And, you know, can you imagine if a fast food company says, you know what, I really can't afford to make my hamburger without E. coli and salmonella and other kinds of foodborne diseases,
right.
You know,
we'd,
it's just really...
run them out of business.
It's really
Holly,
kind of...
Holly, sorry to interrupt you here, but we've got a commercial break that we're coming up against. Hang on, please, and you can finish that thought. Holly Sklar, a writer for the Knight Ridder Tribune News Service. This is the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Hey folks, it's John Madden here to tell you about the June Best Buys at Ace Hardware. If you've got a paint project, come in today and get top quality Ace Royal Shield Satin House and Trim Paint for only $16.99 a gallon, our lowest price of the year. And not only can the folks at Ace help you match over 1,400 colors, the Ace Royal brand comes with a 25-year warranty and is backed by the Good Housekeeping Seal. So hurry in to your local Ace Hardware throughout the month of June. Ace, the helpful place.
Quantities limited, available at participating stores.
Here's the problem with most test drives. You don't really get to test anything. You go around the block, maybe two if you're lucky, and the whole time a salesman's yapping nonstop, probably to cover up that weird noise that's coming from the engine compartment. Only one car company has the confidence to let you take a car home overnight and drive it on your terms. That company is GM. It's called the 24-hour test drive. Drive it to work, to soccer practice, see what your friends think. There's no pressure to buy. It's a big decision. There's a lot of money on the line, and we want you to be totally comfortable with it. Of course, you have to have a driver's license. You have to have insurance. You have to have approved credit. I know, we're real sticklers. Oh, yes, you have to be 21. Just get to a participating dealer by July 21st. For more information and to locate a participating dealer, click to gm.com/24hour or call 1-800-508-1050.
Attention all plaintiffs. Personal injury, negligence, premises liability, medical malpractice, product liability, commercial cases. Receive up to $50,000 instant cash assistance. Call now, 800-586-5493. Get cash now on your pending lawsuit. No risk, no payments. We only collect when your case is settled. Call 800-586-5493. Express lawsuit funding can help you. 800-586-5493.
If you're looking for the latest in cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune into Tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program with experts featuring the latest in consumer electronics, technology, computers, and the Internet. We cover all things cool, like digital photography and video, home theater and audio, home automation, gadgets and gizmos, the technology of making music, computer peripherals, HDTV, DVD, MP3s, car audio, navigation and security, and lots more. If it draws current, we talk about it. Let us bring you into tomorrow. Check out our website anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, here on the IE America Radio Network.
See the look on Nancy's face.
What's she doing?
I asked her if she wanted a boogie, and she just gave me this condescending sneer.
Is it the condescending, I don't boogie?
How would I keep up with her?
Right.
Boogieing.
Nancy can boogie. Yeah. Doug, I've never seen you dance.
Kind of looks like a frog in a blender.
I could dance with you till the cows come home. On second thought, I'd rather dance with the cows than you come home.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Yes, I'm calling up
about the Mike Malloy program. You know, the reason I turned this man off...
Why?
...is because he sounds like an 8-year-old.
Me?
Name calling.
I'm not an 8-year-old. I'm not an 8-year-old. I'm not.
You should get somebody who at least has some intelligence.
No, don't fire me. No. I got kids in college.
The Mike Malloy Show, weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight, Eastern Time, on IE America Radio Network.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Cooler wars with common sense, uncommon sense from the radical middle. This is the Tom Hartman Radio Program on the IE America Radio Network. We're talking with Holly Sklar, who is the author of lots and lots of great stuff. Sounds kind of broad, but she's written on many topics. Raise the Floor, Wages and Policies, the Work for All of Us. And her website is raisethefloor.org. Is that right, Holly?
Yes, it is.
Okay, great. And be sure that people know about that. Let me just toss a couple of stats out here. This is Huck Gutman wrote a piece in the Rutland Herald here in Vermont that Common Dreams picked up yesterday, as I see. Why Bush ignores the numbers, and I want to get your take on why there isn't any kind of a consensus in America that there's anything wrong with this. He says, between the start of World War II and the early 1980s, America became a more economically egalitarian society with the rise of the great American middle class. I'm editing as I read here. In 1915, before the establishment of the income tax, the very wealthiest families earned 400 times as much as the average family. The income tax leveled that out so that by 1970, those families earned just 50 times as much as the average. But by 1998, this is after the Reagan Revolution and Bush won tax cuts. Now, by 1998, that egalitarian trend had been dramatically reversed. The wealthiest one-tenth of 1% now earned 250 times the average. So this was started by Reagan. Almost all the nation's economic gains went to the richest 1% of American families. The top 1%, those earning over $230,000, saw gains of 78% in their income share since Reagan. The top half percent, that half million families earning over a half million, saw their income share double. The top tenth of 1%, those earning over $1.5 million, got almost three times as large a slice of the pie. The top one-tenth of 1%, America's richest 13,000 families, saw their income go up 395%. Now, in that same period of time, in 1998 dollars, the average American average annual salary for Americans went from $32,522 to $35,864. And more than 10%, just since George Bush, W. Bush, came into office, more than 10% of all manufacturing jobs available in the United States have vanished. Where is, Holly, where is the outrage? Are you seeing it? Am I missing it?
I think there's a lot of outrage to the rise in inequality that's been going on steadily here since the mid-1970s, really. One of the simplest stats that I use to bring home this point is that since the mid-1970s, the top 1% of households have doubled their share of the nation's wealth. They've doubled their share of the nation's wealth. It's up to about 39% of the nation's wealth, and that is about as much as the bottom 95%. So it's a huge, huge, huge growth in disparity, and it's getting worse. The IRS just came out with a report looking at the top 400 earners. I'm not going to go more into stats because I know our time is short, but it just shows a tremendous growth in the top 400 income holders in this country from since 1992. Again, a doubling of their share of the wealth of income.
So what can we do about this, Holly?
I think there is an awful lot of outrage. If you look at opinion polling, you will find, for example, almost 80% support for a rise in the minimum wage to $8 an hour when you ask that question. Tremendous amount of support. You will find the opinion polls showing that people don't want government to be cutting taxes now if it means cutting services and cutting government programs. They would rather have the services. They don't want their schools closed, teachers laid off. They don't want more pollution. They don't want their libraries closed. They'd rather have the taxes stay as they are. And they certainly don't want lower taxes so disproportionately on the top 1% of the country. people with an average yearly income over $1 million a year. I mean, a lot more people think they're in the top 1% than they really are. Fortune magazine, when they did their CEO, looking at CEO pay this year, they put a smiling pig in a suit on the cover.
I know, I saw that. It was incredible.
I mean, really bringing it home. And they headlined it, you know, have they no shame? Their performance stank last year, yet most CEOs got paid more than ever.
Yeah. Holly Sklar, we're speaking with. Holly, can you stick around for a few minutes?
Yeah.
Okay, great. We've got another break here, and then we'll have a little more time on the other side. I'd like to ask you what the presidential candidates and other legislators are saying about this stuff. This is the Tom Hartman Program. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
For the IE America Radio Network, this is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm John Hamilton.
Time's almost up for public comment on a U.S. Department of Labor bid to radically reduce the number of American workers who qualify for overtime pay. And since the Bush administration's Labor Department refused to schedule a public forum on the proposal, labor unions in Washington, D.C. decided to hold their own hearing in the public auditorium of the department's headquarters. The event was to have been coordinated by the International Federation of Professional and Technical Engineers and open to other unions and the general public, but according to the union's communications representative, Candace Rett, the Labor Department put a halt to the idea.
I received a call from a John Void at the events management office indicating that until further notice, all outside events at the Department of Labor had been canceled.
Labor Department officials did not respond to repeated requests for an interview. Candace Rett believes the department doesn't want word of the changes to get out.
If these proposed regulations go through, it will amount to a pay cut, simple and plain, for millions of workers.
Rett says Monday's forum is still a go and will be held outside the building.
The U.S. Department of Labor is going after former Enron executives for the destruction of thousands of Enron workers' pension funds. The lawsuit filed Thursday accuses some 20 Enron execs, including former chairman Kenneth Lay, of shirking their responsibility to protect worker pension assets, instead leveraging that money to keep a fraudulent corporate accounting system alive. More than 20,000 Enron employees lost at least two-thirds of their retirement nest eggs when the company imploded in December 2001. Nearly two dozen similar civil suits have been filed already, and the Labor Department suit will likely be consolidated with those. Damages could collectively run to more than $1 billion.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Hi, Truth Seekers. This is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive, political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES.
Hi, this is Bobby Likas, host of Bobby Likas Car Clinic, inviting you to join me Saturday mornings from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern here on IE America Radio Network. People love to talk cars, and local sponsors know that. But IE America Radio has other shows as well. Shows that your listeners will love, that will attract local sponsors, and shows that will set your station above the rest. Go to IEAmericaRadio.com and take a look and listen for yourself to see what's available. That's IEAmericaRadio.com.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Stops and bombs.
Welcome back to the vast conspiracy of the radical middle. Take no imitations. This is the Tom Hartman program on the IE America Radio Network. We're talking with Holly Sklar, the co-author of Raise the Floor, Wages and Policies That Work for All of Us, a myth-busting book which argues a job should keep you out of poverty, not keep you in it. RaiseTheFloor.org. RaiseTheFloor.org is the website for that. She's also written Chaos or Community, Seeking Solutions, Not Scapegoats for Bad Economics, and Streets of Hope, The Fall and Rise of an Urban Neighborhood. Holly, I'm wondering where our politicians are coming down on. Well, first of all, there's a point that I wanted to make, and I'd like to get your response to this. One of the things that I've been trying to do on this program is get conservatives on, because I think that just having people who agree with me all the time isn't the best of radio. It's, if people have information, that's really important. But secondly, it's the point that these folks are constantly making is, oh, it's just liberal guilt, or you're just trying to do a Marxian redistribution of income for social engineering, blah blah blah. And I have to confess that the reason why I think that we should have a much higher minimum wage than $8 an hour, a minimum wage that satisfies the criteria of Theodore Roosevelt, which is that it gives you enough money that you can actually put money aside for a good retirement, that you can put your kids through college, and that you can pay for all your medical expenses, which in my opinion would probably be $15 or $20 an hour at least, that the reason why I think we should have this is because I have spent the last 25 years in part working in third world countries doing international relief work. I know what it's like to live and be in a country where when you walk out the front door of your house, you literally have people with leprosy or beggars standing there. This is just a very selfish thing about let's have a decent quality of life for all of us. And I think that even people who are, and I've spoken with some very wealthy people about this, and they say, yes, we would like to live in a country where we don't have to be terrified when we go out of our door. And this isn't just purely egalitarian, that there's a large interest, a large element of collective self-interest in this. Do you find that argument flies, or do you think that, oh, it's a fairness issue? I mean, what are the ways to position this to make sense to people?
Well, there are all kinds of takes on that. There's a group called Responsible Wealth, which is made up of wealthy business people and investors, and they make a couple of arguments that are important. One is the one you just made, which is this is about self-interest in the sense of, more inequality is associated with higher crime, with worse health outcomes. People who live in high inequality areas actually have worse health, even those who have higher incomes, because there's more of a stress level and so on.
Well, not just that. I mean, a third of the country of India is infected with tuberculosis right now, over 360 million people. Now, only about 10% of them are active and contagious, but I mean, that is a direct result of poverty.
And the responsible wealth folks, though, also make another argument, which is it's ludicrous to think that people have great wealth and, have done it all on their own. And that's the great pretense that they try and put about. And these are very wealthy people. Warren Buffett, top investor in the country, says, I didn't do it all by myself. I'm in a country that has given me so much in the way of infrastructure and the way the system is and the way of supports that allows me to be what I am. And I don't pretend. Warren Buffett doesn't pretend. He did everything by himself. And there are an awful lot of people in responsible wealth who will tell you, I wouldn't be where I am if not for things like the GI Bill, Veterans Administration loan programs, publicly supported research programs, the infrastructure of highways and the internet built with originally with government money, and so on and so on and so forth. So there's all kinds of aspects to this that is really important for people who are in the business community, for example, to be talking to each other. This isn't just workers talking to employers, but there are all kinds of employers who understand that good wages are good for business. And we make this point a lot and Raise the Floor. We try and argue very strongly that business can afford higher minimum wages, and we try and deal with all the arguments against that. We also make the argument that better wages are actually better for business, not just that they can afford it, but it's better, because it stimulates demand, because it decreases turnover, because you make a better product, because consumers like it better. And one of the great cases in point of this is the fast food firm In-N-Out Burger. It's a chain. It's a regional chain. It ranks first in all the national surveys among fast food chains in quality, value, and service. It's the place that Julia Child, orders in for her hamburgers while recuperating from knee surgery. That company pays a starting wage of $8.25 an hour to even part-time workers. It has paid vacations, food at work, the option of participating in a 401k with a company match. It's a company very profitable that people want to work for. It shows that you can do it even in, of course, the fast food industry. And it shows you can do this and you can be ranked number one, you know, above McDonald's and Burger King and the rest in quality, value, and service. Your consumers like it better. So
right.
It's good for business.
Yeah. Now, some would point out that there are fast food places that are paying $7 and $8 an hour simply because they're in areas where that's what they have to pay in order to get anybody to work for them. And
and that's a great point about you can pay higher wages when you in a sense, have to. And one of the great things about the minimum wage is it's a level playing field. If you raise the minimum wage everywhere, then it's not a competitive disadvantage for any one outfit. You know, the restaurant across the street has to pay that same minimum wage. The fast food place down the street has to pay that minimum wage. The local produce place and so on. So it's just as if we were in a situation of tremendously low unemployment, which we were in the late 1990s, in the year 2000, where there was this sense that, oops, we've got to pay people more because there's too low unemployment. People aren't going to work for such low wages anymore. So
now, the conservatives make the argument, though, that the main con argument is that if you raise the minimum wage, there's going to be a lot of small businesses in particular that can't afford to pay that, and so they'll just close their doors, go out of business, and you'll see
a reduction
in overall employment. Do you have
they
statistics
make that argument,
to repeat
that? I really urge people to raise the floor on that because we really try and hit that head on. There's no difference in affordability among small businesses versus business. Certain places will have a harder time making a minimum wage higher, things like child care centers, for example, which need more government subsidy because it's so labor-intensive and expensive for parents, and so it's very hard to just on your own raise the wages of child care workers. You can, of course, but they should be much higher, and government subsidies in that area is one of the places that is so important. But there are, again, you know, all kinds of arguments in the book about small business as well as larger businesses, and you can hear from some small business people in the book talking about how they did it and how it's important and good. But the thing I always tell people is, when's the last time you heard Walmart, right? Walmart will tell you, you can't raise minimum wage because it's bad for small business, right? And then Walmart's running around blowing all these small businesses out of the water.
Yeah, as if they're really worried
about
it.
And so it's a really hypocritical argument because it's being used as camouflage for the companies that are destroying small businesses in the country.
Right. Spot on. 1-800-TALK-YES is our phone number if you'd like to participate. 1-800-825-5937. And Raymond in Cement City, Michigan is on the line. Raymond, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Yeah, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
This very interesting discussion, and I think one of the things that comes to my mind in this is everybody forgets that in economics, they forget the principle of circulation. And if people don't have money, they don't circulate. It doesn't grow. We live in a universe that there's abundance, and we try to strangle some people so we think we can have more, or some people think they can have more. It doesn't work that way. You've got to have circulation of in the economic system, otherwise it just dies.
Right. And,
we get another call if you could turn up the volume for me. I'd appreciate it.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. This is a real weak telephone line.
Yeah. Okay. I think your point is a good one, Raymond, and thanks for calling and making that point. I appreciate your calling in. Raymond's point is that this is the argument that's been made against trickle-down economics. So this is the reason why George Bush Sr., when Ronald Reagan was proposing this stuff, called it voodoo economics, the idea that in order to stimulate an economy, you give more money to people who don't spend money, that just invest it.
Invest in things, but then there's an oversupply, and we're in the fix that we're in right now. Which is
right.
That people can't afford, in a business sense and in an individual sense, can't afford all the products that are being made. And you're in a situation where the government is not investing. You know, we're having the tax cuts and the budget cuts. And so we're in a situation where government investment that's important in things like education and hiring teachers and all this is going in the opposite direction, which is also anti-stimulus and bad for getting an economy out of a bad economy. But, you know, one of the things that's really important to understand about minimum wage and why these arguments are so kind of crazy coming from the other side is we used to pay a higher minimum wage when the country was much poorer. We're the richest country in the world. Back in 1968, when the minimum wage hit its peak, if you took that, what was the minimum wage of 1968? What would it be in terms of $2,003 adjusted for inflation? It would be $8.45. $8.45. Since 1968, worker productivity has risen more than 80%, while the minimum wage has dropped nearly 40%. Productivity and the minimum wage and average wages used to rise together, because they should. The Labor Department talks about this. Worker productivity means you get more output per worker per hour, and that means that you can sustain profits and you don't have to charge higher prices for your materials and you can still pay your workers more. But what happens is worker productivity, the rewards of worker productivity, has gone increasingly to the top executives, and you've had this whole rise in inequality where essentially the top is just increasingly ripping off the bottom in a way that we haven't seen since the era of the robber barons.
Right. It's the Gilded Age all over again. And the point that I keep the mantra of this program when we talk about these issues is that the core of the conservative agenda is cheap labor. Everything boils down to cheap labor, from their moral legislation to their, I mean, just right across the, it all boils down. Holly, just to wrap this thing up here, what do you see being done on a national level about this? What do you think is the possibility of a change in the minimum wage? Who are the politicians who are enlightened about this? And are there any of the Democratic candidates who have taken up this issue?
I haven't heard them all say it, but my guess would be that they're all in support of a higher minimum wage. You'd have to look and see who's on the record. But in general, the Democratic Party has been very supportive of raising the minimum wage for a number of years, and it's been thwarted by Republicans. So as a party, there is legislation proposed in Congress. It doesn't go far enough. It's to raise the minimum wage to $6.65 an hour. They've been trying to get this through for years. But again, the Republicans have stymied it, and so they need to hear more from people saying we want a higher minimum wage. I do want to point out Congressman Gephardt on the Democratic ticket, running for the Democratic to be the presidential candidate. Mm-hmm. He has actually called for looking at an international minimum wage, and I think that that's very important, and it shows that he understands the importance of this issue.
Although the problem there is you get these disparities of cost beyond
just
labor.
Oh, sure. No, it wouldn't be one rate for everywhere. It would say what's the floor, and you'd adjust it for purchasing power and,
Historically,
it would be very geared toward local economies and what do things actually cost. But the notion that if you're a multinational company doing business all over the world, just like we had to stop the race to the bottom among states, you have to stop it among countries. Otherwise, it's a completely lose-lose situation for workers, because if you say that there's nothing stopping, you know, basically every company from threatening removing to China, where they have terribly low wages because it's propped up by, you know, a complete anti-union repression and prison labor and all kinds of other things, and you say, well, you know, tough, if they're paying 50 cents a day, that's the way we all got to go. If you don't counter that, then we're all going to continue down this path, which PhD engineers, software professionals now are feeling what it's like to be in a situation where, you know what, it doesn't matter how highly educated you are. If the company can get the work done more cheaply in India or China, where they pay much, much, or even Russia, where they pay much, much lower wages, that we got to talk about what's fair for workers, that fair days pay for a fair day's work, wherever you live.
Yeah. And historically, we dealt with those with tariffs by recognizing, okay, if it costs $1 an hour to make shoes in Indonesia and it costs $10 an hour to make them here, then we're going to add a $9 tariff to the cost of those imported shoes so that there's a level playing field. And that's been blown out of the water by WTO and GATT and whatnot.
It has. And one of the things to look at it from the positive way of approaching it rather than negative is the whole notion of standards, codes of conduct. Mm-hmm. That companies, if they're going to do business internationally, have to subscribe to codes of conduct.
Franklin Roosevelt talk about how if something was not made by people earning a fair wage, that it should be considered contraband?
He did. I have that quote in the mouth that I just did. It's he said, goods produced under conditions that do not meet a rudimentary standard of decency should be regarded as contraband.
Great.
And we have said internationally that we basically regard as contraband goods that are produced under conditions of slave labor. And we have said that we regard as contraband goods produced under conditions of prison labor or child labor, very young children. Well, similarly, we got to be talking about enforcing codes of conduct that say goods produced under conditions where workers are paid starvation wages is not tolerable either.
Right. And on that note, thank you, Holly. I appreciate your being on this program. We've been talking with Holly Sklar, the author of numerous wrong piece of paper here, the author of numerous books and articles, and the RaiseTheFloor.org is your website, right, Holly?
It's the website that goes with the book, Raise the Floor.
Yeah, okay, great.
But you can find lot of op-eds and links to other groups and things like that.
Great. RaiseTheFloor.org. Thank you, Holly, for being on the program. I appreciate it very
much. Thanks very
much. Bye. You're welcome. So we have M. Douglas Ivester, the chairman and CEO of Coca-Cola, just retired at the age of 52. Actually, this was 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago. He was the president during a time when the company's growth stagnated, earnings fell, and Coke had the largest product recall in its history. So, and we know, you know, that they're all around the world at the bottom paying, well, actually, I don't know exactly what they're paying. We can assume that it's fairly low. But what did this guy get when he left? A retirement package worth $17.8 million, plus 2 million shares of stock worth almost $100 million. Their goodbye present also includes, this is from an article by Marty Geezer on Alternet, $795,600 a year till the year 2002, then $675,600 a year for the duration of his or his wife's life, plus $704,000 in annual pension payments, plus $1.5 million a year for 3 years, plus $675,000 a year through 2007 for consulting fees, and on and on. Is this a livable wage? Tom Hartman program on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Niagara Falls, Raymond! Nature's wonderful! But imagine if nature stopped working. Like when you're constipated.
Maureen.
Good thing you use Philips Milk of Magnesia. It helps your body work more like nature intended. Philips has no harsh stimulants like many overnight laxatives, so you get comfortable, cramp-free relief of constipation. Right, Raymond?
Yes, Maureen.
So you feel like your natural self.
Naturally.
Philips, comfortable, cramp-free relief. Also try great-tasting French vanilla.
Mom, what's wrong?
My knees are killing me. I shouldn't have jogged this morning.
Today's my party. You gonna be okay?
I should be. The party's hours away.
And we have tons to do.
The moment of choice, Tylenol or Advil. Which works better to get you through the day? Truth is, Advil can give you longer-lasting relief, better relief than Tylenol for tough muscle aches and pain. And Advil is gentle on your stomach.
Mom, you look like you're having fun.
I really am.
For better relief, advance to Advil.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now. Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide, and you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
The Mike Molloy Show.
Joining us now is Jason Campbell with the Christian Action Network.
Well, since 1991, the gay movement has gone down to Disney to do these gay days. You've had events where you've had Mickey Mouse with Goofy in sexual positions.
Ah!
Homosexual movies are shown on the Disney transportation systems. And what kind of movies, for God's sake, do they show on these buses?
Triple X.
Oh, you're kidding.
If a child's riding beside one of the buses and looks up and says, Daddy, what is that on the television monitor?
Right.
It's going to be an embarrassing moment.
Oh, it'll be worse than embarrassing. The child will be scarred for life.
Right. That's what the homosexuals want.
Well, I know. They're after the kids. Now, the only thing I'm afraid of is somebody just tuned in the program and never heard the program before and just went, oh, Jesus, this guy is really a right-wing freak.
The Mike Malloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Hi, Truth Seekers. This is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive, political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES.
Greetings, everybody. This is Ramsey Pollard, Jr., the host of IE America's Sunday afternoon travel show, Ramblin' with Ramsey, on air 5 to 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Almost every Sunday, I travel to some location to offer you the opportunity of not only receiving wonderful printed material about the location, but to win a prize, maybe a couple of nights in a hotel or a resort or T-shirts or fudge. Oh, yes, there's always a lot of fudge. Come on, tune us in on your radio or go to IEAmericaRadio.com. I'll be there.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Back here with the Tom Hartman Program, where democracy is still alive and well.
Yesterday, the United States Supreme Court said that states cannot criminalize homosexual behavior among consenting as adults in their own homes, in the privacy of their own homes. But the day before yesterday, to quote the Washington Post, President Bush called on Congress yesterday to make it easier for federally funded religious groups to base their hiring decisions on sexual orientation. In other words, now, there's a is this an oxymoron? Federally funded religious groups? Well, of course, now we have them. It ain't anything that the founders would have gone along with. I don't have the quote from James Madison in front of me, but I've used it before. Madison went into an absolute rant about the idea that the United States government should fund religious schools. He thought that was just that would be the end of America. Nothing in life is permanent but death and taxes, Kendra writes in. She says, now that has been rewritten. It should be nothing in life is permanent but death and government deficits. And Adam on our message board, and Adam from Toledo, Ohio, posted a message. He said, because my country has sold its soul to corporate power, because consumerism has become our national religion, because we've forgotten the true meaning of freedom, and because patriotism now means agreeing with the president, I pledge to do my duty and take my country back. One of the interesting things that we found on the MoveOn.org thing is that, first of all, Dean won it, for those of you who haven't noticed, although he didn't win 50%. He 43%, but he was ahead. And then Kucinich was number two, Kerry was number three. But then on your second choice, you know, would you vote for this guy if he gets the nomination? Dean got 86%, and Kerry got 75%. Kucinich, 68%. And then it goes down from there. So pretty much everybody said that, the lowest was Al Sharpton with 35%. But everything above that, everybody said, even at that point, you know, we will vote for pretty much anybody that the Democrats put out there. It seems that, you know, more than half of the people were essentially saying that or saying something about that. So MoveOn.org, PAC, or MoveOn. PAC.org is where you'll find that website. Thanks for joining us today on the Tom Hartman Program. Tune back in Monday, same time, same place.
It's coming through a hole in the air from those gnats in Tiananmen Square. It's coming from a field that this ain't.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
Truth Seekers, this is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES.
Talk, not your father's radio program, take 48.
Tune in to Animal Talk this Sunday for Animal Celebrity Boxing.
Boxing kicks butt.
Lightweight bout featuring fearless Felix the Cat.
Yeah, what a cat.
And that dog on ice, Tanya Harding.
Yeah, that dog will fight anyone for a buck.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on IE America Radio Network.
Sunday.